In white satin, never reaching the end. Letters I've written, never meaning to send. Beauty. Seattle business with these eyes before. Just what the truth is, I can't say anymore, 'cause I love you. Some hand in hand, just what I'm going through, they can understand. Some try to tell me thoughts they cannot defend, just what you want to. And I love you.
Welcome to the Insomnia Stream, Beyondism edition. I'm your host, of course, Devin Stack. Hope you're having a good weekend. Good, I don't know, May. May? We're already halfway through May? It's kind of crazy. We're already halfway through May. It's heating up here in the desert. Did some beekeeping today. Bees are doing all right. There's still apparently enough nectar and pollen around to where they're bringing more in. Had a few hives swarm out because of my failure to get to them in time, but whatever. They were They're feral hives anyway, so it doesn't really matter. I'm not losing any good genetics. If anything, all they could do is improve. So, but yeah, got some honey, been extracting some honey. Honey is very messy and very sticky. And when it's mixed with wax, it just makes a mess. It's just a mess. It's a complete fucking mess. And, I have a room now that's just sticky. The entire room is sticky. And I'm sticky, and everything's sticky. So, yeah. But, really good honey. Surprisingly different flavors of honey. I've just been mixing them together. I'm not keeping them separate, but I've had a few hives. Like I've just taken frames. I'm not taking whole boxes. I'm letting the bees keep a lot of the honey for right now. And surprised at how different in flavor and color a lot of the honeys are. And that being said, I'm not keeping them separate. I'm kind of just mixing it together and just having honey generally. But it's all unfiltered and raw honey that I will be storing away. I've got too much of it now. I've probably got, just from today, I don't know, roughly about 5 gallons I extracted probably today. So that's that was fun. And I got a whole bunch of, probably have at least another gallon that's mixed in with wax cappings and stuff. So that's one part of the process I haven't quite figured out an efficient way of dealing with the mixed. I mean, I can press it through cheesecloth. I've got ways of dealing with it, but I'm trying to figure out like a nice, easy way of separating wax from the honey that's left over from the decapping everything. And once I've got that figured out, the whole process will be, I'll have a fairly good understanding of and kind of a process, I guess, that I can go about in the future. So still experimenting, and hopefully by the end of the summer, when I extract some more, which won't be a whole lot more because, well, in most places in the country, you harvest in the fall after the summer. It's not really a good idea in the desert unless you get a second spring, which sometimes happens, depending on how much it rains. Because if you harvest more at the end of the summer, you're just going to lessen their ability to survive the winter because of the availability of new pollen and nectar sources. But, yeah. So this is probably it for this year in terms of harvest. Anyway, tonight I thought we would talk about Beyondism. Beyondism, I think the reason why I came across this while researching something else, but it piqued my interest a little bit simply because I think right now we have a lot of criticism of Christianity and the way that it is, relates to white nationalism or even just white genocide or even just Western society generally. And people are quick to point out the exploits and the weaknesses. And there's a lot of discussion about this, and it's discussion that has to be had. But there is a severe lack, in my opinion, of any solutions or even alternatives that are even somewhat viable. Usually, when there are alternatives offered, it comes in the form of, like, say, paganism. And I've often pointed out that some of the big problems with that is, A, no one actually believes in Thor. You know, they don't. No, let's be honest. Even if you're a practicing pagan, and I'm sure there's at least one or two of you guys out there listening, do you really actually believe it? You know, or is it more of like a respect for your traditions and maybe, you know, there's some way of psyoping yourself into believing it a little bit, but no one actually, I mean, come on, no one actually believes in Norse gods, right? Like no one actually does. And, or at least a very tiny minority does. And there's not wide appeal for new people to start believing in something like that. And the other problem with it really is that it's a step backwards in a way. You can say it's sure. I think that the natural inclination for white people, especially those who are facing the existential crisis that we are, is to look back at the past and want to preserve parts of our culture and our heritage that we find valuable. But at the same time, we can't always be looking backwards. And I think there's a tendency of white people right now in our current situation. And, obviously, one obvious example that's not quite as, you know, let's go back to the fucking, you know, pre-Christendom days, but rather let's go back to the 90s or let's go back to the 1950s or but it's always going back. It's never looking forward. And which is a problem in and of itself, because inevitably, no matter how far back you go, you are just going back to an era that will inevitably lead to where we are today, you know? And I guess you could say, well, if you rewind the tape long enough, it'll be a really long time before you get to today. And it's like, well, okay, but, you know, you're still going to get there. And so it doesn't really address anything in terms of you know, moving forward and progressing. I think that's another problem, too. I think that just the word progressive has really kind of sullied and made dirty the concept of progressing as a race and as a people. Because that term has been hijacked by communist Jews to mean something horrific and to mean something that's really interchangeable with to some degree with white genocide. And so people tend to almost in a way embrace the opposite of evolution, you know, like de-evolution, like going back to basics is one thing, but almost, I mean, to, like as we see with, say, like flat earthers, you know, like a rejection of science, a rejection of modernity that mutates into an embrace of like a Luddite worldview. And so that's kind of a problem too. Anyway, in looking at, you know, solutions that have been offered in the past by intelligent white people, I came across Beyondism. And this is not an endorsement of Beyondism at all, like at all. But it's more just an exploration of one man's ideas as to what could possibly be a viable theology for people interested in the evolution of their race in a way that is anti-globalist, in a way that is that in not always, but in many ways embraces many of the tenets that many of us hold dear, and kind of take a look at it just academically and see what could be learned from this, what his criticisms really are of Christianity and Abrahamic religions generally, what his proposed solutions were, because at least he had a proposed solution, and what if anything you could take from this and implement, whether as a replacement for or in tandem with your current theology. I don't know. I just think it's an interesting look at a philosophy that I don't think would, and we'll go into why, I don't think would ever have the ability to take off. It's a sad reason, but it's a very, I think, definitive reason why it would never, never ever take off. But without further ado, let's just go into the background of the man who came up with Beyondism before we even talk about what it is. That's the man on the screen here. This is Raymond B. Cattell. He is well known in the field of psychology, in the field of intelligence testing, here's like a little bit of a bio on him. He was born on March 20th in Hilltop, England, in 1898. He earned a degree in chemistry from King's College London at age 19 in 1921. By 1924, he completed a PhD in psychology at the University College London under Charles Spearman, focusing on intelligence and factor analysis. In the 1920s through the 1930s, he developed an interest in personality psychology and worked as a lecturer and researcher in England. In 1937, so just prior to World War II, he moved to the United States. And this is something, a context that's often lost. Eugenicists were fairly mainstream prior to World War II. And he's a eugenicist. And a lot of his work was in that context. In fact, America was really the pioneering, I guess, academic playground for eugenicists prior to World War II. And it wasn't until World War II and the narrative of evil Hitler and, you know, all the, you know, the Holocaust and everything that goes along with that, that eugenics got a bad name. In fact, prior to World War II, several states had eugenicist laws, forced sterilization laws, and had programs in one way or another to alter the genetic makeup of their people in ways that they thought were eugenic. And those laws were challenged and brought before the Supreme Court to give an idea of how much things have changed. And they were upheld by the Supreme Court, including forced sterilization laws that about half the states had. Some states, I think, technically still have forced sterilization laws on the books. They're just not enforced because after World War II, the whole narrative changed that, you know, eugenics was bad, it was evil, it was synonymous with genocide and the Holocaust and all this stuff. But before that had happened, he moved here in 1937 and I think taught at Columbia University. And that's another window into how much things have changed. Columbia University inviting eugenicists to come teach prior to World War II. Whereas now Columbia University is basically a hotbed of anti-whitism and communism. In 1938, he published one of his earliest works in personality traits and started laying down the groundwork for his personality trait theory, which we'll get into in a moment. In 1941, he joined Harvard and he refined some of his methods for studying and testing for personality. In 1945, he was appointed a research professor at the University of Illinois, where he spent the bulk of his career. In 1946, he published a description and measurement of personality, introducing his 16 personality factor, or the 16 PF model, which we'll get into in a moment, which became pretty much the gold standard for personality assessment. In the 1950s and 60s, he expanded his research on intelligence and sought to distinguish between fluid intelligence and crystallized intelligence. and you know, differentiating between intelligence that was innate versus intelligence that could be learned, and influencing cognitive psychology with his theories. In the 1960s, he developed the Cattell, or with John Horne, he developed the Cattell-Horne theory of intelligence, integrating the fluid and crystallized intelligence concepts. In the 1970s, he published extensively on personality, motivation, and group dynamics, and authored over 50 books and 500 articles. In 1978, he retired from the University of Illinois, but continued his research and writing. And in the 1980s, he formulated what we're going to be talking about tonight, and that is Beyondism, which is described as a controversial ethical philosophy proposing that human evolution should be guided by scientific principles and group selection, detailed in works like A New Morality from Science, Beyondism, and another work, Beyondism, Religion from Science. He suggested that societies should prioritize genetic and cultural progress, and because of its eugenics-like implications, of course, it was criticized tremendously by Jewish academics. In 1997, he was going to receive the American Psychological Foundation's Gold Medal Award for Lifetime Achievement, but it was protested because of his connections to eugenics. And in 1998, at age 99, in fact, like a month from being 100 years old, he died on February 2nd in Honolulu, Hawaii. So, lived almost a century, and contributed significantly to the field of personality testing and psychology, and with a focus on in later years, his Beyondism, I guess you could call it a theology, that was science-based. Now, this is kind of an example of his 16PF model, or at least the results of the 16PF model personality test. This is probably his most famous contribution, more so than the Beyondism. And they still use this, or variations of this today, to help with career counseling and just or even just psychological counseling and that sort of a thing. It's a more complex version of a lot of what we use today, which usually, like, you know, people have heard the Myers-Briggs or what is it called? Like the five-factor personality test or something like that. But this is just a more granular version of that, and those were largely based on his work. The 16 different points here, you can see they it's like a sliding scale between the first one, you know, what, how reserved versus how outgoing you are. So this would be kind of like the introvert extrovert thing. The second one being concrete thinking versus abstract thinking. So you know, you're thinking outside the box versus, you know, Rain Man, autism. Affected by feelings versus emotionally stable. So basically how easily your mind can be hijacked by emotions. The fourth being how submissive versus dominant you are in the way that you conduct yourself. So I guess, you know, MPC would be the fully submissive and radicals would be fully dominant. How serious versus happy-go-lucky you are, that's the way it's described here. Obviously, that's, you know, that doesn't really require explanation. How expedient versus conscientious you are. How shy versus bold you are, which is different than reserved and outgoing. How tough-minded versus sensitive. How trusting versus suspicious. How practical versus imaginative. And a lot of these might seem like they're redundant, but this is why, I guess, more modern tests have kind of consolidated these into the same category, whereas he actually spent a lot of his research prior to making this test on trying to be as granular as possible by going through and evaluating dictionaries, you know, to try to come up with the most precise words possible to have the most granular descriptions of personality, and making these different, you know, these subtle but important differences in these terms. How forthright versus shrewd. How self-assured versus apprehensive. How conservative versus experimenting. How group-dependent versus self-sufficient. How undisciplined versus self-controlled. And how relaxed versus tense. And he was also one of the first people or researchers to, instead of looking at these personality tests as a tool to deal with individuals, rather to apply these to groups of people. So people that maybe have similar occupations, and try to find where these groups had similarities, you know, intragroup and intergroup, and where they would have departures. And in fact, the example image here, as you can see, that I found to illustrate the test, it's airline pilots versus creative artists versus writers. And so some of the departures you see between the creative types and airline pilots would be, the most obvious is tough-minded versus sensitive, which would make sense if you have an airline pilot, you know, someone that is having to make, you know, very precise decisions based on real-world data that is free from emotion. That's the kind of departure you'd want to see in an airline pilot versus a creative type. Another one is practical versus imaginative, same exact reason. You know, you don't want very imaginative airline pilots. Self-assured versus apprehensive, same thing. And you can see that airline pilots also excel in self-control, and that they're very relaxed. Because, you don't want a airline pilot who's high stress, tensed, and you know, unable to be relaxed to make high pressure decisions that could affect the lives of hundreds of people on board of an airline. So this was one of his big contributions to the field of psychology. Now, let's take a look at Beyondism. The Beyondism, one of the major differences, in fact, this is where there's probably a big conflict between at least a lot of Christians, not, I don't even know if it's the majority these days, but at least a lot of Christians versus a practicing Beyondist, I guess you could say, is that the Beyondist would say that a lot of Beyondism is based on the acceptance that evolution is the driving force of not just human existence, but life. That evolution is the driving force behind life, and that because that is the driving force behind life, that we should seek to create a philosophy or theology that accepts this and that is in harmony with this, and rather than a theology or philosophy that rejects it. And that one of the benefits to this would be, for example, if you believe in evolution, you start to believe in large or long time scales, right? And I think one of the shortcomings of people who reject evolution and the people that, like I'd say extreme fundamentalist Christians who literally believe the earth is only 4,000 years old and that we were, made out of clay or, whatever it is, right? Like that there was no pre-human beings and that dinosaurs are fake and, all this other stuff. One of the shortcomings of that, and one of the problems that it creates is you start thinking in shorter timelines. That doesn't just project itself into the past. It's not just that if you think the world is 4,000 years old, that it makes you unable to conceptualize things that, like evolution that takes millions of years. But it also inhibits the universe in this way. Prior to especially the year 2000, there was a lot of this focus on, the end of the Mayan calendar is 2012 and it's going to be this new age that's going to be ushered in by who knows what. But that seems to be a part of the human condition in a lot of ways to view the era that you live in as being sort of like the preamble to something big that's about to happen. Because there does seem to be some kind of consistency across many religions that at least gives at least creates the possibility of this interpretation of your existence. And so a beyondist would say, well, this sort of thing would no longer exist because you would view the universe as having an infinite timeline, really, in either direction of your life, and that all of your decisions and your all of your ethics would be based on this idea that you are really just in a random spot in an infinite timeline. There is no great event, to the degree that there ever is one, that's just around the corner. There is no expectation that you're preparing for something that is imminent and everything that you do should be done in keeping with this idea that you are on this infinite timeline. It also, a beyondist, which there's no real, let's get that out of the way too. There's not like practicing beyondists or anything like that. There used to be, I think, a beyondist society or something like that, but that, nothing like that exists. This is just strictly academic. We're just looking at it. But if they were to exist, they would also say that because of this infinite timeline and because of evolution being a reality of this, that's a far more more beneficial thing to base your ethics around rather than something that is taken on faith and just divined. Accepted rather than having to be put through any kind of scientific ringer. Another aspect of beyondism is this idea that human progress depends on natural selection, not just between individuals, but between entire groups. And in fact, this is really kind of a big concept when it comes to beyondism. and that the competition between individuals, while that guides natural selection, not just biologically but culturally, you also have to have these different groups competing with each other in order to foster an environment that's going to accelerate and optimize natural selection. So this is where you kind of get the anti-globalist sentiments of beyondism, because it views globalism or multiculturalism as kind of a dysgenic force on humanity, because it is it's effectively hobbling one of the major drives of natural selection, or drivers of natural selection and evolution, by instead of having separate groups of people competing against each other, just having one giant group. Now, there's a lot of people, to put this in a way that a lot of Americans at least would understand this, especially those who don't believe in big government, for the same reason. It's the difference between wanting a strong federal government that makes broad, far-reaching edicts that the entire continent essentially has to obey, and versus having 50 different states that all have their own individual, you could say, experiments running simultaneously. And I think a lot of Americans who would relate to this this difference of philosophies and would embrace the idea that there should be 50 different experiments going on, usually the idea is, well, if you have 50 different states who are free to exercise their autonomy and to perform their own experiments separate from each other and from the federal government, you will have an environment where progress it will be increased, because you'll have more test tubes in the laboratory to be looking at. And so when a state creates a new law or a new culture that becomes more effective and accelerates progress in that state, then the other states could look at that state and be like, well, why are they doing so well? What can we maybe borrow from what they're doing and apply it to us as it would relate to us? And it wouldn't be exactly the same, because every state is different, and that's part of maintaining this experiment as having 50 different test tubes as opposed to one. You would never want to adopt whole cloth all the ideas of the most successful state, because then you would just, you'd go back to the original problem of having just one experiment going on. But you would have different states looking at each other at all times and in cooperation with each other under the umbrella of the federal government, and they would be distinct people. You'd have, each state would not only be different in terms of their laws, but you would have a distinct biological difference even between the states. You would have, in a perfect world, especially through the lens of a beyondist, you would have ethnic differences between Californians and New Yorkers. You would have, genetic differences between people in Nevada and people in Louisiana. You would have cultural differences between two different states. You might even have, to some degree, and we used to have, differences in language and dialect and everything else. And that maintaining these differences from a beyondist point of view is actually crucial for the overall survival of humanity. And obviously this would extend to creating different or maintaining different races and different nations. So a beyondist would want to for example, oppose multiracialism and promote maybe not completely isolationist, but largely isolationist views of the world, where you would have different races of people competing against each other. And so that's another major, I guess, foundational principle of Beyondism, is that in order for natural selection and evolution to take place, you have to maintain different groups, in that by eroding the existence of different groups and by mixing the test tubes together, you're actually retarding evolution. You are retarding the progress of mankind by limiting the experiment to just one test tube. And in fact, putting all your eggs in one basket, you're actually increasing the likelihood of total collapse, total extinction, by putting all of your eggs into one globalist basket, and opening yourself up to the possibility that a global mistake is made that leads to the extinction. They would also say that not only is it better to have these different test tubes going on simultaneously, because you have these different experiments going on, but it also contributes to a sense of competition, right? And that's pretty easy to view if you look at what the Olympics, for example, were supposed to be. You have this rivalry between the different nations, between the different ethnicities, and this is it basically materializes at the Olympics. Well, it used to before, again, the test tubes started getting mixed up. You have this camaraderie, you know, this coordination between the different countries, you know, they come together and they compete in a healthy, nice way. You know, it's not like a war, you know, the losing team doesn't get killed or anything like that. You know, it's a very peaceful way of competing in a way that recognizes that, you know, the existence of mankind as a group, but with several subgroups that that can be defined and do have their differences and can compete with each other. And so having these different groups, not only does it limit the possibility of stagnation when it comes to evolution, but it also promotes healthy progress within different groups, because they do see each other as competitors, and it does increase the likelihood that they will progress. So, I think that's pretty much, that covers that aspect of it. Another key concept when it comes to Beyondism is that, this might sound a little bit like it's, this is kind of a little repetitive. It is that in order for evolution to work, you need to maintain actual diversity. And that if you actually care about, you know, human diversity, that the last thing you would want to do would be to mix people together, because that would be the death of diversity. That if you were to get everyone, let's just say, use two different countries as an example. Let's just say you have Spain and Uzbekistan. And let's say for some reason you decide to mix the two together. Well, now you'd only have one people eventually. I mean, you'd have a lot of nonsense, at first. But I guess you could look at Mexico, right? Mexicans exist because you mixed Spaniards with with Aztecs, you know, basically, and you created this hybrid race. And so you want to keep these people separate so that you maintain genetic diversity, and which, again, helps with the evolution of not just the individual countries themselves, but all countries benefit from having this genetic diversity. So that's, again, that kind of goes into the thing we were talking about previously. Another foundational aspect of Beyondism is the understanding that a group's success would depend on the rules that it defines and that it lives by, and how its members would treat each other, meaning the people within their own group, and that what would be considered ethical for any particular group would, at the end all be all, what would define what is ethical within that group would be, does it help the group survive and thrive? And that would define literally every ethical question. And that this would also, because it does focus on that specific group, it departs from most of the modern day religions in that there is no universalism. It is specific to that group. And what might be considered ethical within, say, the Congo, and be legitimately ethical for the Congolese, wouldn't be considered ethical to people who live in England and the English people, because their priorities are going to be different, because the priority of the English people is going to be the survival and the thriving of the English people. And every ethical quandary will be that'll be the test that is applied to it, and that is how they will determine what is ethical, is does this benefit the English people? And so clearly you're going to have differences, because the survival and the thriving of the English people in some ways, in some instances, will be in direct conflict with other groups and what is going to ultimately promote their survival and their thriving. And so this is another aspect of Beyondism that is very different from most popular religions, is that it is not universal at all. It maintains that every group's ethics are independent of every other group's ethics, and that this is actually a positive thing, to have these relative ethics, and that all ethics, I guess that's a good way of putting it, all ethics are relative to the group practicing those ethics. And that this would increase the success of these groups. And look, you could say this is one of the things you hear a lot of people point out about Jews, and that one of the reasons why they seem to be successful when they go to other countries is their ethics continues to center around what is good for Jews. It never changes to what is good. Like if a Jew moves to Spain, the Jew still thinks about what is good for Jews and not what is good for Spain. If a Jew lives in America, their decisions are what is good, you know, based on what is good for Jews, not what is good for America. And this is a major point of contention for people who are, who are in opposition to Jewish power, is that Jews do practice this ethnocentric set, you know, ethical implementation. And so Beyondism would say every group should behave this way, every group should consider ethics to be relative to their group, and that paradoxically, as much as it might seem like this wouldn't benefit humanity as a whole, than it actually would, because by every group focusing on what's ethical for them and what is going to help them survive as a people, it maintains these other foundational principles of Beyondism, meaning that it is maintaining this diversity that Beyondism sees as necessary. It's maintaining the promotion of the survival of the fittest. It's maintaining it's focusing evolution and natural selection for each individual group. It's focusing that energy and taking the power away from more altruistic philosophies or actions that would actually retard natural selection for individual groups. That if every group was interested in the evolutionary success of that group, that would streamline natural selection and evolution for each individual group. So that's a major difference, you could say, between Beyondism and literally any universalist religion, that right and wrong would maybe even, you know, something as simple as right and wrong would be different depending on what group you're talking about. And that I guess the other side of that is the ethics are every ethical question is determined by what is best for that group. So it also gives it a scientific process in which those ethics can be determined, meaning that because you have, it's no longer a mysterious or faith-based decision-making process what your ethics should be. It's no longer a supernatural determination what is right and wrong. It is easy to determine what right and wrong would be if you know that right and wrong has to be whatever is good for the race. Now, again, there might be some trial and error. You might think that, well, this is what's going to, you know, as a race or as a group, you might determine that doing X, Y, and Z is what's going to be best for your race, and then you end up being wrong, right? And so you end up having ethics that are actually bad for your people, thinking that it was going to be good for your people. Well, that's, again, that's part of natural selection. Groups that are making bad decisions like this, groups that are making decisions that are actually contrary in conflict with what's best for their evolutionary future, they would be judged harshly by evolution and natural selection, and they would be selected out because they were making these bad decisions. So even though that, you know, it might seem like it's still a little arbitrary, it's not, because if a group does make these decisions that are bad, that they'll be punished for it by not, you know, by failing. Another principle, I guess you could say, of Beyondism is that, not really a principle so much as it's a worldview or a view of other religions that Beyondism has, is that traditional religions did emerge out of evolutionary need. And that it is, in a way, you could describe it as a technology. And Beyondism, of course, because it's a competing technology, views other religions as inadequate and outdated technology. They view other religions, you know, traditional Christianity, Islam, and whatnot, as technology that grew out of the need to set forth values and ethics that would be good for the survival of the group. And so that essentially these religions were trying to accomplish that the same thing that Beyondism is trying to accomplish. And that is to create ethics and behaviors and rules that would promote the survival of the group, but that all of these religions made a fatal mistake, and that is they tried to apply their rules to everyone, ignoring the fact that different groups have different capabilities, different needs, different destinies, different desires. And so by trying to universalize their rules, their theology, their philosophy, to be one size fits all, they do so at the detriment to different groups and in different ways. So one example would be, you often hear a lot of leftists complain about Christian missionaries that, the colonists would go and colonize a third world country and immediately attempt to try to convert the locals to Christianity. And, you know, they complain, oh, this destroyed our heritage. And Christians would say, well, you know, all we were doing was let's take India as an example, right? In India, they had the practice of, I forget what it's called, but where if a man dies, then his wife throws himself onto the, you know, when they burn the body of the guy, the wife throws herself onto the fire. And the English, the colonists said, you know, they put a stop to that practice because they saw it as barbaric. And so to an English person, it would be barbaric to do that. And that the argument there from the Christian Englishman would be that, you know, we stopped a great evil. You know, they were these backwards people that were needlessly sacrificing the wives of these men, these widows. But it's ignoring the context of, had you left this society alone as a separate society, that was part of their evolutionary path. That it was one way of, you can disagree with it, but Beyondism says it doesn't matter. You know, their ethics are relative to them as a people. Their ethics dictated that, well, we don't know what to do with these. It was solving a problem. We have these widows that our society is not equipped to provide for. And so when their husband dies, the man that's providing for them dies, we got to throw him in the fire. And to an English society that is equipped and has mechanisms to deal with these widows when these instances happen where their provider dies, it seems barbaric and out of touch. But unfortunately, they've disrupted and upended the evolutionary process for the Indian people by trying to apply their ethics to the Indians. And so that would be considered a, you know, I guess in a way it's kind of like the Star Trek prime directive of, you know, you're not allowed to alter the course of more primitive groups. Beyondism would say, you know, their ethics are relative to them. They're, you know, if they decide that's the way they want to deal with these excess women, then that's the way they should do it. And who knows, maybe in 1,000 years, some version of that ends up being a better way to handle the excess people, or, you know, whatever. And so that's one of the mistakes that they say that not just Christianity, but most modern religions make, is this idea that your value system, your ethics, it should be applied to everyone, regardless of situation, regardless of ethnicity, regardless of geography, regardless of everything. That there should just be this universal ethics applied to everyone, that the justification for this is that it was a revealed, a deity declared this so, and there is no other context other than a deity has just decree that this is the way that all humans need to be, and so therefore there it is. From a Beyondist point of view, this distorts natural selection, it distorts evolution, and it begins to promote globalism. it begins to promote this all the eggs in one basket kind of a situation. And it begins to mix the contents of the different test tubes into one test tube, which again creates all these other problems that arise from that. And that they see that evolution depends, it requires variation. And not only does this universalism, when applied across the whole world, when you start to apply the same ethics to everybody, ethics themselves stop evolving. Meaning that if you just apply the same set of rules to everyone in the world, and the source of these rules are, it's a divine source, it's just, this is what it is, then the ethics themselves will never change. They will never evolve because there won't be any other test tubes with different ethics showing another way that might be more productive and might be more effective. So you're basically stunting the growth of humanity, not just your group or other or the out group, you're stunting the growth of all of humanity by trying to apply universalist ethics. One example would be, for example, and here's the other, I guess the other aspect of that a Beyondist would say, that it's not just because you want variety, it's not just because you want different versions of, different ethical frameworks working separately so that you can, have all these different tests going on simultaneously. But it's also because it's a recognition of the reality that different groups have different ethical requirements, and that different groups have different ethical requirements because they have different aptitudes, they have different motivations, different desires, and it's a recognition that groups are different. And so, for example, love thy neighbor. It's a pretty basic Christian concept. That might work really well in your group. That might work really well when dealing with other members of your group. But if you try to universalize that and apply it to other groups who are not genetically predisposed to behave in the same way that you are now perverting your relations with other groups because you're making assumptions about them that aren't real. If you think that your ethics are universal, not only is that a problem because of all the reasons we just discussed, you're also putting yourself at a disadvantage because you're making assumptions about other people that are not real. You are saying that because ethics are universal, you're basically saying humans are universal, that there is no difference between different people, because if there was, then ethics wouldn't be universal. Because you can't have your cake and eat it too. If ethics are universal, if morality and values are universal, then really there is no difference between people. Because the only thing that would make ethics and values different for different groups is if they were different. And by the way, if they are different, it works the other way around. It would necessitate a different set of ethics and values for each group. And so that really is, I think, more than almost anything else, when it comes to Beyondism, kind of highlighting a problem with universalist religions, that right there really, I think, encapsulates a major issue with universalist religions, is that if you believe that there should be one universal set of ethics, then you can't possibly believe in differences between races. You can't. Because if there's differences between races, then there should be differences between ethics and morals and values. There just should be. You shouldn't apply the same set of ethics and morals and values to groups that are fundamentally different. So you can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't say, on one hand, we're all very different people, But on the other hand, here's the universal laws that everyone should live by. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up. And so that is, I think, one thing that Beyondism, I think, articulates in a good way, or at least in a way that is that might give you some food for thought. So that's really I think something for a lot of people who are or who believe in universalist ethics, that's something they need to square. Because you can't have it both ways. Either if you believe that rules apply to everyone, then everyone's the same, or at least, you know, to some degree or another, they're pretty much the same. Another aspect of Beyondism is that, like a religion, Beyondism needs to satisfy human needs, psychological human needs, and at least address the psychological human needs and explain them in the same way that a religion does. But Beyondism would say its attempt to address these psychological needs that humans have would be based on a scientific explanation on why those needs exist, and based on a scientific explanation as to how to remedy these issues, and it would describe religions dealing with these very real things by creating myths and imaginary scenarios that would psychologically soothe the problems away. So, for example, you know, thinking of an afterlife, you know, to explain or to remedy the fear of mortality that all living beings of a certain level of intelligence, once they become intelligent enough to be able to realize that they're going to die, they begin to fear this. And if you don't address that, it would become debilitating. You wouldn't be able to make it through life because this fear could potentially paralyze you, because you would be afraid of taking risks. You would be afraid of, you know, anything that could potentially endanger your life would be off the table if you thought that, you know, that was it, and it would just, you know, be really scary. And so Beyondism would say, you know, we seek to address these same fears, but we're not going to make up some story about it. We're going to try to come up with rational reasons for why you shouldn't fear death. And it also would say that a lot of the source of these psychological issues that humanity has, it's, and this is a concept we'll get to in a moment, it's a result of what Beyondism describes as genetic lag. And genetic lag is, to put it simply, it's that culture and innovation and technology progresses faster than genetics. And the genetic lag is the fact that we, as people alive today, for example, this is a perfect example, people alive today, we did not evolve in an environment that included the internet, as an example. And so the issues that arise out of access to the internet that humans run into is a product of what Beyondism would call genetic lag, that we haven't had the internet long enough to actually evolve away the problems that are caused by having this access to this new technology. And so anytime you have these leaps in culture or these leaps in technology, you're always going to have at least a period of genetic lag. And because technology and culture is always progressing faster than biology, you always have genetic lag. And so a lot of these urges that we have or that create these psychological issues that religion seeks to address, a lot of them are a product of genetic lag. So, for example, a lot of your baser instincts that are no longer relevant are that religion seeks to help people deal with by creating explanations for, you know, like why a human might want to indulge in premarital sex, and why they, you know, why a human might want to steal or lie or murder, when Beyondism would say these are just vestige impulses. These are just leftover impulses from a more primitive time, and that technology and society has evolved faster than our biology has. And so we have these leftover impulses and these leftover desires and these leftover feelings that make us have psychological conflicts with the more evolved technology and society that we exist in. And so that religion is seeking to address this genetic lag, that, or the issues that arise from this genetic lag, and that Beyondism is also trying to alleviate these issues, but by giving them a more rational explanation, they can address them more more easily and more effectively, because they're not applying some kind of mysticism to these impulses, but rather trying to address these in a more objective way, and less of a supernatural or subjective way. So, for example, they would say that you know, this misalignment between your genetic urges. You know, another thing would be like food, right? Like we all have these genetic urges to eat high calorie, you know, foods. And so what happens in the West when all of a sudden high-calorie food becomes easily accessible? Everyone gets super fat because the genetic lag, where we have not evolved in this environment where there's all this food everywhere. And so we're still slaves to this desire to eat all this food. And a religion might say, might explain this by, oh, that's gluttony. It's, you know, it's lack of self-control, and they would address the same problem, but using you know, what Beyondism would describe as mystical metaphors in order to try to address these issues. Whereas Beyondism, because it's Beyondism would say it would be more effective at dealing with these issues because it's more rationality based, but it's also because this sort of issue is always going to be changing, right? Like, you know, people, let's not think of it religiously so much as the Constitution, right? Where people would say, well, the Constitution, they'll make arguments about freedom of speech and say, or even, you know, the right to bear arms, saying that, well, the Constitution didn't anticipate automatic weapons, or it didn't anticipate the internet, or didn't anticipate this or that, and try to say that, you know, the morality, I guess, dictated in the, and the values dictated in the Constitution, are not, because, you know, because technology keeps progressing, or it's not equipped to handle the new technology. And a Beyondist would say the same is true of religion, where religion set up a value system that was relevant to people 2,000 years ago with technology of 2,000 years ago, and that as technology progresses, it's ill-equipped to handle these new ethical problems that pop up. But because Beyondism is centered around evolution, And for whatever is best for that group's survival, and whatever is best for that group's thriving, that those ethics would also evolve. That it would not just be these written in stone rules, that we live by these rules under any circumstances, and those circumstances being biological, geographical, whatever, everyone lives by these rules. Beyondism would say, actually, we live by these rules until we don't. We live by these rules until we can determine that these rules are no longer helping us survive and thrive. The moment that these rules are preventing us from surviving and thriving, those rules necessarily have to change. Not that they should or can be changed, they need to change because they no longer promote the survival and thriving of our people. Let's see here. Another aspect of Beyondism is that it doesn't believe in, or it doesn't promote the idea of a God or an afterlife or a heaven or anything like that, but instead that your sense of immortality would come from your contribution, because the whole focus of Beyondism is the perpetuation of your race, the improvement of your race, the evolution of your race, the survival of your race. Therefore, any sense of immortality, which is something that a lot of humans need as a result of their knowledge of their own mortality. One of the reasons why they need this sense of immortality or this solution of immortality to soothe them from the problem of their mortality. Beyondism would address this by making a culture of immortality around your contribution, your legacy being your contribution to the survival and the improvement of your race and your people. And that would not only address the issue that individuals would have in terms of a need to have to alleviate this fear of their own mortality, but it also would increase the output of the race if everyone was driven by a need to have a legacy that was centered around the survival and the improvement of their race. So Beyondism would make the argument that this would be superior to most modern, or really all modern religions, because most modern, most modern religions deals with the problem of mortality by providing the alternative that, well, no, you don't just die and cease to exist. You die, and then if you were a good person, and look, in some ways it addresses it in a way that also promotes the well-being of your people, because like Christianity as an example would say, well, you die and then you go to the gates of heaven and Saint Peter or whoever, right? You get judged based on how you treated your fellow man, and if you were a good person or not, and if you were generally a good person, then you get to, you know, move on to the next level and of something good. And in fact, there's not just a carrot, there's also a stick, where if you, and I guess you could say Christians could maybe even make the argument, this is something that would make it superior, is that in addition to having the carrot, that you get to move on to heaven, but if you're a bad person, then you actually are tortured for eternity in hell. And so there, you could make the argument that, if it weren't for the universalist aspects of this theology, and if it were just focused on were you good to other white people, just, you know, through the lens of a pro-white worldview, if you limited it to just your interactions to, or at least prioritized your actions to other white people, that it would actually address this in a superior way, because Beyondism doesn't really have a stick. It's more just a carrot. I guess the stick would be that you didn't contribute, but that's not much of a stick. Beyondism would say, though, that it fulfills this need, and simultaneously it promotes the progress of your race and your people by making everything about your legacy and everything about how you contributed to your people. And that they would also say that one of the differences would be that in Christianity and really all other human religions, and this is another area where I think probably other contemporary religions would look at beyond us and say this is a major flaw. In these other religions, even if they're universalists, they believe that humans are unique. Humans are special. Humans are favored by God. Humans are above all the other life forms. And there's something even divine in some way about humans because we're created in God's image and that we're special in this way. Whereas Beyondism would depart from that worldview and say that while you should still keep only acting in the interest of your race, and so obviously your species, that there is nothing special about humans. We are just one of many species, and that every species is in competition with each other, and that you are special in that your priority should be with your species, but there's nothing divinely better about your species. That if we're going to be completely emotionally detached from everything, which it seems like Beyondism really, really focuses on and is being hyper-rational about everything, that there is nothing special about humanity, that it's just one of many species in competition with all the other species and subspecies. And that the universe neither favorably or unfavorably looks at humans as different, that nature is completely indifferent to the existence of humans, and that we are equally we're on equal footing basically, other than our progress in the evolutionary timeline. We're on equal footing with every other animal that exists. And this is, I guess, where Beyondism would say this would be one of the weak spots for Beyondism for a multitude of reasons. One is, even if you agree with that, even if you agree that humans are essentially on equal footing with every other living being, and that doesn't mean that we don't value ourselves more. We do. Every group should value themselves as, prioritize themselves. But that concept, that idea that we're not divine, that we're not special, that we're not different than every other living being, that it would have some bad side effects psychologically, and that it would call for an emotional detachment that humans are just not. They just don't have. We're not robots. And I think that's one of the issues with Beyondism, is that it kind of treats humans like they're robots. Maybe that they're not robots, that they're emotional robots with the capacity to detach themselves from their emotions. And which, humans have proven again and again that they're not capable of doing that. And so this idea that this new spirituality would manifest in a way that would still give people a sense of purpose just by advancing your group's evolution, I just don't think that's a big enough carrot for a lot of people. And this also becomes, and look, this is evident. And I guess psychologically, you could say a good example of how this would never shake out. Just look at the problems we have with even people that are flat earthers, right? The reason why a lot of that exists is they are perplexed by and also fear the vastness of the universe, the idea that maybe they're not special, the idea that maybe they're not, you know, on, in some specially, you know, tailored flat earth, magical flat earth that's made for them. The idea, they have to believe that, that dinosaurs are fake and that space is fake, and, you know, because they, precisely because they can't detach themselves emotionally or view themselves as not special. And that's an extreme example. And, but I think that that would be, that that's a huge issue. And then also you have the idea that you would be able to address people's fear of mortality strictly based on some kind of rational argument. You know, this rational argument that, no, it's fine that you're going to die and cease to exist because you'll have helped to progress your people and evolve your people. I mean, I guess some people will be able to rationally do that, and I think some people do rationally do that. And I think that maybe because if you, under, in a Beyondist worldview, there would be more of an emphasis put on, because of the emphasis on survival and on evolution, there would be more of an emphasis on having healthy, good children that also would have healthy, good children. And that maybe you'd be able to get some sense of immortality out of that. You know, that, that not only are you trying to leave your mark and have a legacy in terms of improving the overall health and destiny of the group, but that you're actually physically contributing to that by having children. Maybe you could get that, but I still think that the fear of your own mortality is bigger than that. I think that, that that's a problem that that would still persist. I don't know, unless I guess you could breed it out of people somehow, right? So another aspect of Beyondism is that your ethical loyalty to your own group, it exceeds, and we've heard, kind of already talked about this, but your loyalty to your own group should be prioritized above your loyalty to mankind generally. And the only time that that should change is if there is a threat to the survival of mankind generally. So in other words, if there was maybe some disease that would equally affect all groups and wipe us all out unless we were to cooperate to fight off this disease, unless there's a circumstance like that, you should always prioritize the survival of your own group, and that means prioritizing resources for the support of your own community over the support of distant strangers, that, and that all of your resources should be put towards your group. And that, I think, is a major issue with I think, the more charity-centric religious views that a lot of people have today, where, and this is why it doesn't work. One of the reasons why Christianity might, see, I think there's a lot of people that look at Christianity and say, well, it worked like 300 years ago, and it seemed to work, even this idea of charity, this idea of turning the other cheek, and they're looking at how it's maybe high, and they see it as maybe being hijacked by bad actors, and or maybe this sense is inflated and distorted and creates problems by redirecting resources that should be put towards the promotion and the success of your people, and it's redirecting these resources to other places. And this is how you get situations where, like Africa, as an example, has this population boom that, you know, a Beyondist would argue, well, under Beyondism, I mean, these motherfuckers in Africa would be dying left and right of malaria. They'd be dying left and right of AIDS. They'd be dying left and right of starvation. And, I mean, the population of Africa would be just a fraction, a sliver of what it is now. And that the only reason why you have this great migration of Africans into the rest of the world is precisely because you had this value of charity that whose origin is, some could argue, in Christendom, in Christianity, being extended to the outgroup, being extended, and that really is an issue, and that's really what you could, I mean, you really could make that argument that one of the things that is creating this perilous situation for white people is that these values that, say, 200, 300 years ago, these Christian values that would normally only apply to your group, you know, being charitable to your own people, trying to uplift your own people, it is being extended now to the out-group. And I guess the real question here is that really a product of Christianity being hijacked by bad actors or by naive people and being weaponized in a way so that you're taking food out of the mouths of your own people and shoveling it into the mouths of Africans and others and, you know, opening up your borders and welcoming everybody and all this other stuff? Or was that always the way Christianity was? It's just that you didn't have the technology that made it a problem. In other words, it's like, to put it another way, and I guess to be honest, would even say this is kind of like the genetic lag thing, right? But to put it another way, think of it like this. Windows XP is no longer supported by Microsoft. When Windows XP was supported by Microsoft and there weren't all these exploits and zero days that made it easy for you to hijack a Windows XP machine if it were connected to the internet, it didn't matter that it had all these exploits. All these exploits existed. You know, all these exploits that they were always patching or whatever, they always existed. It's just the technology didn't exist to take advantage of those exploits. And likewise, you could say all these vulnerabilities that are being taken advantage of that seemingly Christianity has, that are being leveraged by people that want to flood your country full of Africans and similar issues, you could say Christianity always had these exploits. It's just that the technology for mass movement of peoples, for the mass redistribution of your wealth, didn't exist. So that even if you had these vulnerabilities and these tendencies in Christianity, say 200 years ago, the technology didn't exist to really exploit those issues and make it a problem. And so that's where I think a beyondist would say, well, because our ethics are evolving and always centered around what's good for us, if a situation arises where something that was beneficial to our people begins to be exploited and used against us, then instantly that value changes, because it no longer lives up to the ultimate value, which is the existence and progress of our individual group. The second it starts being used against us, it ceases to be a valid value. Whereas with Christianity, you might have things that would have worked great maybe 200-300 years ago, when the historical context is different, when the geopolitical reality is different. And then once the geopolitical reality changes, the technology changes, now all of a sudden you have things that would have been beneficial to your race become things that are easily exploited and used as a weapon against you, and there's no mechanism in which you can go and change this. And I think that really gets to the heart of what a lot of people who criticize Christianity, I think maybe they don't articulate very well, or if they do articulate, they do it in a disrespectful way that's not going to be considered by Christians, and that is, there is no mechanism for which to reform some of these issues, and partially, it depends on which one you're talking about specifically. Part of that is because if the source of your ethics, if the source of your rules, if the source of your theology is divine revelation or what have you, but it comes from a supernatural source, a deity, and it's therefore unchanging, and it's therefore real and universal for eternity. What really could be your mechanism for changing that other than divine intervention? Like, you'd have to have, if that is the case, you really would have to have God coming and appearing to people on earth and saying, I've changed my mind, which seemed to be happening all the time in the Bible, but hasn't happened, for 2,000 years. And so without a mechanism to change that, you get yourself into some sticky situations. And that, I guess, would be something that Beyondism would say, well, we Beyondism would remedy this issue by not just having the ability to reform your ethics, but demanding the reform of your ethics the moment it ceases to promote the ascension of your people. Let's see here. The next, I guess, aspect of Beyondism is that the real test of whether the group's culture and genetics are good is whether or not that group thrives and survives over time. And that if it doesn't, then necessarily that means that there is an issue with that group's genetics and or culture. And that it's as simple as that. If over a period of 100 years, your group is lagging behind other groups, that means that that necessarily means your genetics or your culture or both are inferior, that there are issues, and that the only way to address those issues would be to attempt to adopt in a very precise, methodical way, the genetics and cultures of other groups. Now, this is where I think a lot of white nationalists might even depart from Beyondism, because he suggests that if a group begins to lag, there's like a tightrope you're kind of walking along, because in one way, it suggests that that group needs to disappear, that that group needs to cease to exist because it's failing and natural selection is selecting it out. But you might have a circumstance where that's not preferable, because Beyondism also wants to maintain this diversity, all these different test tubes. So if you start getting rid of test tubes, you start to defeat the whole purpose of maintaining these separate genetic groups if the number of those groups starts to decrease. And so while you want to prioritize your group, other groups also want to prioritize their groups, and it might become a advantageous thing for a group to want to adopt the genetic makeup in a targeted way. Like, look, in other words, selecting for traits. Like, if let's say you had let's just use a real world example. Let's say you have an African country that's failing because they aren't, all the other countries stopped giving it aid. They're all looking out for themselves. And these African countries are no longer able to self-sustain. Their culture sucks. They lack the ability to really kind of enact any kind of new culture. They can't adopt a new culture that they're genetically unable to maintain. So they come to the conclusion maybe that they need to adopt the genetics of another group. And so again, this is where, like, I think a lot of race realists would get uncomfortable. They would want to therefore start looking for groups that have traits that are desirable and start a program of genetically introducing those traits to their group, which would mean inbreeding of whether it's artificially or not. That's what they would seek to do. And Beyondism would support this, because Beyondism doesn't favor, as much as it in a lot of ways it does seem to fit nicely with a lot of white nationalist viewpoints. It ultimately is looking for the progress of it sees itself as a solution for the ultimate progress of mankind generally. And just because it seems like a great idea for white people now, just because we are, in many ways, we would thrive, I think, under this system, it does introduce these kind of weird situations where you'd be genetically experimenting with these other groups once they start failing, in the hopes. In a way, I mean, you'd think of it kind of like with my beekeeping, right? Where if I had bees that were starting to not produce as much honey, and I had some other kind of bees that were, I would, you know, maybe I'd mix the genetics up a little bit. And this is, I think, where people would get uncomfortable, where they would prefer to keep groups separate and let them fail. And if it meant that there were fewer test tubes, it's not a big deal. So that is one, I think, major departure that Beyondism has from, you know, I think, the worldview of a lot of white nationalists there. Let's see here. Another aspect of Beyondism is that both genes and culture evolve through natural selection. And while we kind of have a good understanding of how genes evolve through natural selection, that cultural evolution is a lot more chaotic, you know, a lot harder to predict, and so therefore it's harder to govern and harder to foster a positive environment for, you know, a culture that's always going to be superior. Because, and even with genetics, it's hard to do that too. I think that when he was writing this, there was a more simplistic view of genetics. Because you always get maybe unintended consequences. Even if you start messing with genetics, you might think a trait is positive, and then you find out that you know, by increasing your resistance to, say, this disease, you've actually inadvertently created some other genetic issue, right? And the same thing is true of cultural evolution, right? Let's say that your culture thinks that there's a major problem with creativity, and so they need to be less regimented and less strict about certain aspects of how they educate people and be more open-minded and this sort of a thing. And then where do you draw the line? Where do you start to go into like hippie mode and start just getting too open-minded about everything, and it becomes self-destructive? And so another aspect of what he wrote about was that because we don't know as much about cultural evolution, a lot of the resources available to each group should be dedicated to the research of how that takes place. And of course, that was his field of study. And so I think some of that was a little, in favor of his own, you know, his own funding. That, you know, like his theology made sure to focus on funding his field of study, you know, go figure. So that's one aspect of his writing about Beyondism. And the other thing was that that cultural or cultural evolution is tied to genetic evolution in a way that you can't separate the two. Meaning that while you could say that some cultural advancements are universal in their in the benefit that they give, meaning, for example, like written language is a cultural advancement. And that it's hard to imagine a genetic group that wouldn't benefit from having a written language. And so you could say that these cultural advancements are universal, but one, it's a mistake to therefore say that they're going to be universally good to all people in the same way. Because an invention like a written language, while it might be, you might be able to apply it to all groups universally, regardless of their genetics, or at least, you know, to the degree that they're capable of reading and writing. You know, there is some kind of, there is a level of advancement in, you know, that you have to have in order to be able to read and write. There is also going to be a genetic suitability difference. You know, because if you have a population with an average IQ of 120 versus a population with an average IQ of 80, it's not just going to be the application of reading and writing is going to be different, but even just the degree to which you can read and write. If you want a good example of this, all you have to do is look at the BBC's publication of the Pidgin English version of the news. It's like baby talk. It's insane that they even have that. But they publish news for low IQ black people in like low IQ black people baby talk, because that's all they can really understand. And so this is another, I guess, situation where Beyondism seeks to highlight the fact that there are huge genetic differences and demonstrate situations where this is so. And this is one of those situations where it is so. You can't just assume, for example, that internet access, you could say the same thing. Internet access might be a great boon to a group that is technologically savvy and is psychologically developed enough to handle this kind of internet access. But you give it to another group, a more primitive group, and it actually ends up being a detriment. Another good example of this is of something like this. It's a lot more easy to wrap your head around is just the fact that it's something that we've touched on a little bit before. Native Americans going from a society that has to wrestle their food to the ground, like you have to go take a buffalo out and that's your food for the week or whatever, to you can get Uber Eats now. You don't have to do anything. And the result is you get all this obesity and all these issues. So, or like the example that I've used a bunch of times where you give the AK-47 to the chimpanzee. It's like, okay, you can make the argument that having firearms benefits a group, but it doesn't benefit all groups the same way. And it might not benefit all groups generally. The same technological advance that benefits one group might actually be detrimental to another group. And so that's another, I guess, way that Beyondism effectively articulates that there is a difference genetically between peoples, and some of the consequences of that are that we shouldn't be universalists in our thinking when it comes to ethics, we shouldn't be universalists in our thinking when it comes to access to technologies, and that we shouldn't just assume that because we've invented some technology that is really great for us as our group, that we should just assume that technology would be effective in other populations. And really, this is an indictment of the kind of, this could also apply to like the kind of thinking that you saw from neocons, right, in the 1990s, where they thought that all you have to do is go to the Middle East and topple a dictator and give them democracy, which you could consider a kind of technology, a cultural technology, and that magically they would all start to resemble Western countries. And then, of course, everyone's surprised when they don't, because their universalist worldview, this idea that all ethics should be applied universally to all groups because we're all the same, because we're all God's children and yada, 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 that doesn't actually work out, because we are different. And our ethics and our rules and our values should be different and should be tailored to our specific groups and should not be applied to all groups equally. And that should include technology, and that should include cultural advancements. So that's another instance where I think Beyondism offers a fairly good articulation of differences between groups, and recognizes something that a lot of religions and just societies, you know, even if they're not religious, don't recognize. The fact that just because, you know, a technology is good for you doesn't mean it's good for everybody. The other issue that Beyondism tackles, and this is something that I found kind of insightful. I never really thought of it this way, and I don't know why. But Beyondism recognizes that one of the issues you have with the adoption of new technologies and cultural advancements is you have to remember that cultural advancements and new technologies are the products of the most exceptional people of your group. That these advancements are typically the result of, you might even say, a biological mutation. So meaning that someone is exceptional because their genetics is basically, it's a mutation. Like they're that exceptional, they're that high IQ, they're that outside the norm because they're kind of a mutation. And so the product of these people, of these exceptional minds that creates these new technologies and these new philosophies, they are so foreign to the average person. Like the average person is not out there inventing or, you know, reinventing the wheel and inventing all these new breakthrough technologies, right? They're not. And so they're ill-equipped to adopt them when they appear. And so Beyondism recognizes that unlike when you have a biological mutation, where this adaptation through natural selection and evolution inevitably, for the most part, gets incorporated into the rest of the population through its own little process, that a cultural mutation that's advantageous, while it does go through the same process, we need to recognize it might also take just as long to be adopted. That it's easy for you and I to conceptualize that if someone, you know, like let's say someone's genes make them immune to cancer for some reason, that given enough generations, eventually everyone would be immune to cancer. Or maybe this has already happened with other problems that killed us even younger, because you would be killed before your ability to reproduce if you had if you didn't have the genes that made you immune to that disorder. Those genes would eventually get weeded out, because everyone that was immune would survive long enough to have enough kids versus the people that weren't immune, right? But it's not as easy for us to wrap our head around the fact that that's also kind of how the adoption of new technologies and new cultural advancements takes place. That it takes a long time for these mutations, these cultural mutations, these technological mutations to be adopted by everybody else because of the genetic lag. The lag of like everyone is not a product. We're not a product. We didn't evolve in the environment where this technology existed. So no one really is suited to, I mean, some people will just by an accident of genetics be more suited than others to adopt this new technology or this new cultural invention or whatever. But generally speaking, nobody is evolved to be compatible with the internet, as an example. And again, just through genetic accident, some people will be more able to handle and utilize the internet than others, but no one evolved in an environment with the internet, and so there's no adaptation to the internet, or at least not for a long time. It'll take several generations before people adapt to it, and there's a recognition of this when it comes to Beyondism that I found unique. I don't think that many people have really articulated the adoption of disruptive technologies in this way, in that they themselves are mutations and that they take as long, if not longer, to really take hold, in some instances, as a genetic mutation that would alter the genetic makeup of a people. So I found that interesting, that you would have this. And this is also, because of this, this also highlights or at least underlines the fact that different genetic groups are going to adopt and utilize these technologies differently. Another aspect of Beyondism is that a lot of people, you might even hear people say, I've heard it said, that humans are the only animals that instead of adapting to their environment, to be more suited for it, they adapt their environment to more easily suit them. And this is according to Beyondism, this is false. That this is not quite true, that every animal to some degree adapts their environment. You know, whether you're talking about an ant that will create an anthill, or a beaver that'll create a dam, or whatever, thinking that humans are unique and that we have the ability to somehow adapt our environment and totally reshape, you know, the environment to fit whatever we want, and no other animal is doing that, that's false, that other animals are doing that. And that also it kind of takes away from the idea that we are all influenced by our environments, especially if you look at the different races. We're all a product of our, you know, several generations of different environments. The other thing that they focus on under the same vein is that that we create when we alter our environment, we create, you could also call it creating, you know, technology or creating culture. Something that often Beyondism kind of mixes the two is one thing. But that there's two types, Beyondism says, of cultural or technological advancements. Or really, I guess that is the two types. Or the way that we would, a lot of people describe it today. And that is that there is P culture and R culture. And Beyondism describes this P culture and R culture as P as being culture such as art and, you know, like poetry or you know, like architecture and design and, you know, this sort of a thing. Whereas our culture is more about engineering and more about, you know, the hard sciences. And in fact, I would say that Beyondism doesn't say this, but when I read this, it kind of made me think about how a lot of other, like non-whites especially, will comment on how, oh, white people don't have a culture. And it was a very popular thing in when I was growing up. For even white people to, if you thought of the word culture, you were thinking about cultures of non-whites. You didn't think of culture as something that was white. And not that whites don't have a culture, and there's a lot of people that, of course, focus a lot on reviving, you know, and trying to alter this anti-white view of things, basically, that we don't have a culture. But I think one of the reasons why that actually was that worldview was so easy for white people to adopt was that there wasn't this differentiation being made between, you know, not that obviously the white people have never contributed to poetry and things like that. We have Shakespeare, obviously, you know, things like this. We have culture. But the culture that is most pervasive in the world that comes from white people would be what Beyondists would categorize as our culture, where, you know, it's more technological output, it's more engineering output. And that I think that, and one of the great things really about white people is that we are are at the very least more focused, and our output is more heavily in the side of our culture, or what Beyondists call our culture, which is the technology output, the technological output, the discovery output, the science output. And all you have to do is look at the world and look at where the origin of even like the foundations of science, all the way up to the most, you know, advanced technology, where is it coming from? It's white people. And because that's not considered culture, in at least in the way, you know, people popularly talk about culture, it's often ignored as, and so it takes away from the cultural, or at least what's viewed as the cultural output of white people. When the way Beyondism looks at it is, you know, these kinds of inventions, these technological advancements, these scientific advancements, that is cultural output. It's just they categorize it as our culture versus P culture. So I found that interesting, as you know, because it's when you think about it, it really is kind of true. When you start to, it's an interesting way to articulate it. And it is something that I in the past, I have sought to articulate. I remember getting into an argument with a Mexican guy once, many, many, many years ago, because he made that same argument to me. He was saying, oh, there's no such thing as white culture. And I was like, what are you talking about? And I, at the time, I was in my head equating a lot of our technological advancements as our cultural output. Because I think I said something, yeah, this was, I was a lot younger than I, and so I didn't articulate it the best way, but I basically said something like, oh, if we don't have any cultural or culture, how do you explain, you know, the internet and radio? And he's like, oh, those are just inventions. And it's like, well, okay, but that is cultural output. It's cultural output. And in fact, in a way, it's superior to, I don't know if it's superior, but it's superior in terms of its advancement of humankind, the R culture versus P culture, because it's R culture, not only is it more tangible, but it's also something that can be more easily adopted by other groups to advance them, you know, advance those groups, which is not necessarily good for us, but it's, you know, it's good for everybody else. All right, don't worry, guys. I know this is kind of. I'm trying not to get too in the weeds with this stuff. I'm just trying to give people things to think about. I found this interesting, and it made the wheels turn when thinking about different things. That's all I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to get your creative juices going, and for you to just, you know, think about some new ideas. That's all. I'm definitely not advocating for Beyondism. I'm not a Beyondist, but I just, you know, this is a very intelligent white guy who had a lot of ideas, and some of them are good. Some of them are good. Not all of them. So the next thing that Beyondism focuses on is that eugenics should be taken up by every group to improve their gene pool. That they should, because if you think about it, Beyondism is driven by the idea that we are, you know, that we should be in harmony with evolution and natural selection. Well, then therefore we should try to streamline that process. And so there should be a deliberate eugenic purpose to our group. That there should be rules governing the genetic output of our group, if one of the goals of our group is to improve the genetic output of our group, then we should be doing things proactively that address that. And things that also help reduce, because Beyondism sees a lot of the problems of humans as a result of that genetic lag that we were talking about before, the fact that we're always less evolved than our current technology, that we should then try to proactively speed up that evolution to be more suited to interface with that technology, and that that would reduce the genetic lag, and that would also increase the technological output of our people, because more people would be evolved to use the existing technology, which would then increase innovation. And that's of course a big taboo with literally almost everybody. Eugenics post World War II has become a big naughty word and has been relegated to the same status as genocide in a way. And that's the way people look at eugenics. It's like if you say that you're a eugenicist, you might as well be saying you believe in genocide. That's how they view it. But if your ethics are all based on what is best for the improvement of your group, then eugenics is a no-brainer. And it should be just as much as you should have governance that promotes innovation in technology or in cultural output. And we do have government programs that subsidize art and subsidize technology and subsidize innovation. Then we should also have governments that subsidize eugenic genetic not just the research but the implementation. And by the way, that's the way that our country in America was going prior to World War II. That's exactly what was happening. We had eugenic laws on the books in several states that were upheld by the Supreme Court, proactively getting rid of bad genes was the focus, and not so much trying to increase the good genes. And I would say that's where a Beyondist would probably depart from, or want to, I guess, accelerate eugenics, because the implementation that was in use prior to World War II in America was basically just ending the bad genes, not so much promoting the good genes. But you could say it would even be eugenic without having to say, like, you know, without having to create weird rules where you are directing, you know, this person must breed with this person because we've analyzed their traits, and if we make, you know, we're going to breed them like horses or, you know, race horses and shit like that. You don't even necessarily have to do that so much as you can let natural selection take place simply by removing the welfare and social programs that make natural selection impossible. Where you know all you have to do in order for to have a eugenic effect on your gene pool is to stop punishing the high performers and saddling them with the responsibility of paying for the low performers, while simultaneously sterilizing the ultra low performers. And by that I mean people who are mentally retarded, people that are rapists and murderers. And that's just, imagine if that's all we did. Imagine if all we did for a couple of generations is instant death penalty for all murderers. So they're just gone. They're not only are they out of the gene pool, you are no longer having to spend resources of people who aren't murderers on people that are murderers by keeping them alive in a prison somewhere. So you execute all murderers. All like extreme violent, like any hyper violent crime, you know, like a super violent rapist or even like a violent mugger, you know, any hyper violent crime, you just execute them outright. And then you start sterilizing anyone, like, as a society, you decide where to draw the line. You know, maybe you decide to sterilize anyone who steals a car, and maybe that's like That's the minimum you can get away with before you get sterilized. But let's just say you just started sterilizing criminals in mass, executing criminals in mass, while at the same time removing all of these financial burdens that you have placed on the people who are good so that you can pay for the people that are bad. After like just five generations, it wouldn't be a utopia, but it'd be way fucking closer to a utopia than it is today. And that's the kind of thing that people are uncomfortable talking about. And Beyondism would say the reason why that is so is partially because of Christianity's focus on the dregs of society, this focus on the prodigal son, this focus on, well, Jesus used to hang out with prostitutes and shitty people, and this focus on all and on basically that we all have the same value when we kind of don't. And that is the big difference that Beyondism has in this respect from Christianity that I think that maybe is worth considering, is that we all don't have the same value. And if we can recognize and accept the fact that we all don't have the same value, then all of a sudden it's not a big humanitarian issue if you want to start sterilizing people and executing people. All of a sudden, this idea of just innate human rights goes out the window, because instead of having some, oh, we have these God-given, human rights just by virtue of existing, we all have the same value and worth when we really don't. If the aim of your society is the improvement and survival and thriving of your race and your people, then you don't all have the same value. In fact, there's some people that, given the right calculations, you could make the argument, are having a negative effect on your race's survival and your race's ability to thrive. And this kind of thinking, like I said, this wasn't that taboo in 20th century America until all of the anti-Hitler propaganda of World War II. Hitler was hugely influenced by the eugenicists of America, and in fact, used many of the templates created by American eugenicists to implement the policies that he was implementing in Germany. And this is the kind of racial hygiene, which is one way they used to put it, that has been completely thrown in the trash because of the post-World War II narrative of, it leads to genocide. Well, it doesn't, by the way. It even in the extreme position, well, what would be considered extreme by a lot of people that I have, that you should just basically execute all murderers. How is that? I mean, sorry, I don't feel like I need to even defend that. I don't think that's an indefensible position, that we should execute all murderers, or that we should sterilize retarded people. Why do you feel like it's such a horrible thing to prevent retarded people from having children? What's the argument for retarded people get to have kids? I don't understand. Like, what exactly are we missing out on by preventing retarded people from having kids? And look, you can even work out a compromise and say, like, look, if you're retarded and you don't want to be sterilized, you can always leave. We will deport you to some other country that likes having retards going around having babies. So this is another thing that Beyondism really, I think, articulates in a way that articulates a problem with at least the way Christianity is applied in the West right now, where it this whole concept of, well, we're all of equal worth because we're all God's children. Beyondism would say, well, we're not actually all God's children, first of all, and second of all, we're also not of equal worth. we all don't contribute to the goal that we have as a society in equal amounts. And so therefore, we're not equal in our value. And so therefore, we can also make judgment calls based on this calculus and decide that some of us need to go. And that's a difficult problem for a Christian to address, simply because there is this focus on even like the worst, you know, people, like these, you know, like the thieves and the beggars and the prostitutes, you know, Jesus loved them too. And that is, in my opinion, an exploit. That is something that's easily exploited and turned into turned against us as a people, where it does prevent people from really facing the reality that we're not all equal, that we're not all of equal value, that we all shouldn't be reproducing, that we all shouldn't have be treated as if we all have the same worth, because we don't. And so that's one thing that beyondism really kind of, there's a big departure between how a lot of people in the West think and I guess make, at least creates a rationale for dealing with some of these problems that are otherwise difficult to deal with if you deal with them through the lens of Christianity. I guess another aspect of beyondism is that and this isn't just Christianity, this is also just a Freudian worldview, that this idea of human rights, and this is more expanding on what we just talked about, the idea of human rights as this universal thing, it's not just Christianity that sort of teaches this. It's also the Freudian psychology that talks about the id, which is the Freudian term that describes the internal drives that are constantly demanding individual entitlements like freedom and equality and at the expense of always in opposition to, but usually in opposition to your responsibilities to your group. Whereas beyondism, because it focuses on what's good for the group and what's good for the race and what's good for the long-term evolution of your people, it rejects the idea that you should take into account this idea of the id, that you should have these individualist entitlements up to and including freedom and certainly equality, and that you shouldn't have these universal rights and value and simply because you have this Freudian individualism. And that rights should be a two-way street. It should be more of a contractual situation based on the idea that the conditions are that what the freedom that you have is within the constraints of what you are allowed to do should be constrained by what is good for the survival of the people, for group survival, for the improvement of your people. And it should only exist as an agreement with your group that what you are allowed to do is within a condition of maintaining group stability and improvement. And that everyone should have duties because of this focus on the long-term evolution and progression of your race and of your people, that you should therefore be have not just should you be deprived of freedoms that would go and have, you know, conflicts with this, but you should actually have expectations that, you know, it shouldn't it, that it's not enough to just deprive you of freedoms that would conflict with the evolutionary improvement of your people, but you should actually be expected to contribute to the evolution of your people, and that should be the culture of a successful people. That's the sort of thing, not this embracing of individualism, this embracing of freedom, but rather it should be an embrace of the survival and thriving of your race and of your group. And so this is the sort of thing that would obviously address a lot of the problems that people complain about today. I should have the freedom to be a tranny. I should be have the freedom to be a faggot. I should have the freedom to, you know, to, I'm just being me. I should be able to be a furry. All this mental illness that we see in this hyper-individualist society that, you know, that's this, I guess, late-stage individualism in the West would be addressed, because none of this stuff would be permitted in a beyondist society, because the beyondist would say, well, not only should you not have the freedom to do this, you should maybe be at the least sterilized and at most executed, because what you are doing is actually endangering the genetic fitness of our people as a group, and having you out there in the gene pool is dangerous, because you are clearly a bad mutation or an expression of bad mutations, and so allowing you to exist in the gene pool is dangerous. Then the another aspect is let's see here. Okay, I guess he kind of talks about how, as much as every group should be separate and every group should have its own ethics and every group should have its own genetic separation and, you know, theological separation from the other groups, there should be some sort of coordination between the groups to avoid situations where when you have the interests of two different groups conflict with each other, that there are peaceful ways of resolving that, to at least try to avoid situations where you get into, you know, genocidal warfare, where the competition between groups becomes so so competitive that one group just decides to destroy another group because that's what's in the interest of their survival. Now, that said, the door is left open to, it's not, you know, beyondism does not say that the destruction of other groups in the interest of your existence is outside of the realm of, you know, what would be allowed under beyondism. Beyondism would still say that under certain circumstances, if no other solution, no peaceful solution can be found, and that, you know, that is really the only way you can resolve an issue, you would be permitted under those circumstances to violently seek to destroy another group that got in the way of your group's survival. But there should at the same time be some sort of coordination, some sort of federation between the groups that governs the interactions between the groups, and seeks to find your relationships between the groups that maintain separation while at the same time having some level of cooperation, just, you know, whether it's economic trade and, you know, technological exchange and cultural exchange, because ultimately beyondism would say it's not in favor of one particular group, it's in favor of humanity, And so the whole point of having this separation isn't because they're seeking to protect one group, you know, like white people as an example, but rather they're seeking to protect humanity as a whole. And so having some kind of federation that governs the interaction between the groups is there to facilitate that separation. Let's see here. A lot of this we already covered. Let's see here. More emphasis on eugenics, creating barriers to dysgenic practices. You know, for example, so we already kind of talked about this, opposition to policies that favor reproduction of less adaptive traits. And not only that, but proactively seek to increase the reproduction of people with adaptive traits. Let's see here. Another view that Beyondists would have, I mean, if they existed, they don't really exist, is that this evolution of people and this progress of races should be encouraged up to and including a divergence from each other so extreme that we become not just different subspecies, which many Beyondists would already view the different races as, but literally different species altogether. That kind of divergence would be completely preferable to not having that kind of diversity, because that just increases the diversity. And because of the Beyondist view that there's nothing special about humans, that they don't view that as bad in any way. That like, oh, like now there's these humans that swim underwater and have gills, and you know, that wouldn't freak them out. They would think that'd be cool. Another, you know, just focus on research on this stuff and blah blah blah. So that's pretty much Beyondism in a nutshell. And I would say, really, more than anything else, the biggest obstacle to anything even kind of like this ever being implemented in human societies is that it is so focused on the promotion of the exceptional among your society and favoring the exceptional in your society. And really the disenfranchisement of the unexceptional in your society, that it lacks practicality simply because of that very reason. In meaning that the majority of your people are not exceptional. I mean, that's what makes someone who's exceptional, is they're the exception to the rule. And so the idea that you would ever be able to get the majority of the people to sign on to an ideology that would favor not them, and in some instances punish them, or at least a good chunk of them, you would never be able to get people to sign on to that. The only way, it's like communism, right? Like, oh, if we were all robots and didn't have human nature, then maybe it'd be appealing, it'd work. Same sort of thing. If humans had a natural inclination towards this way of thinking, first of all, you wouldn't need Beyondism, because we'd already think like this. We would already think in terms of what's best for the genetic future of our people. Well, we don't. That's not how people think. And so you would never be able to implement anything even remotely like this, because most people are not exceptional. So most people are going to want to, or are going to gravitate more towards an ideology that's going to benefit them, because most people are self-interested. And it doesn't matter that, you know, in some ways you can make the argument that Beyondism would long-term, on a long enough timeline, positively affect their genetic line. That's not how people think. That's not how people think at all. So unfortunately, you know, well, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, Nothing like this would ever be able to be implemented. But it doesn't mean that we can't look at some of this stuff and think of ways that you could incorporate it into something that might be more plausible. But that's basically what Beyondism was, and that's basically, in my opinion, the big, you know, sticking point is you would never be able to get it to work because most people would benefit an elite few. And in fact, culturally, that's how eugenicists are viewed and demonized, right? And people like Hitler, that's how he is viewed and demonized. It's like, oh, they want to get rid of all the bad people, which means you, if you've got brown eyes or brown hair. And so it's unfortunately that you would never be able to get anything remotely resembling this, even sort of going. Which is why there's, you know, like it doesn't exist. There's no Beyondist organization or members. But I think there's still some positive things that we could think of and positive takes and viewpoints. You know, the idea of cultural output also being technological output. I think that's like a way that, especially because white people, I feel, are more tend more towards the technological output and focus on more. That's where they put a lot of their creative energy into, the technological output, more so than the, you know, writing poetry and shit like that. And I think that, you know, having this idea that, you know, or having a rational way of viewing why universalism of ethics is dead on arrival and why there's issues with that is something to think about for a lot of people. Anyway, I thought it was an interesting thing to discuss, to talk about. Sorry if it was super dry and boring. I know I didn't have any like video clips or whatever to go along with it. There was a interview that was with Cattell talking about intelligence and race and intelligence. But even just like the only place I found that wanted me to pay $200 just to watch it, or they'd send me a DVD for $250, and I was like, no, fuck that. Yeah, I'll pass. And look, if you want to look into it further, he wrote extensively about it. It's very dense, but it's very available. You can find all the writings on this on archive.org. It didn't really take off. It didn't really go anywhere, but it has some interesting points, and it offers some, you know, not very plausible, but at least interesting solutions. And that's something you don't often see when you have people who are quick to criticize, you know, Christianity in some Nietzschean way. It's not very often they have an alternative. And while this is a very unlikely alternative, at least it's an alternative. At least it's coherent. At least it's rational, right? And it's something that maybe, you know, you could build off of or borrow from or whatever. And it's not just complete psycho, you know, schizophrenic ramblings. It's from a highly intelligent, somewhat autistic eugenicist. So anyway, let's take a look at how long have we been live? That's a long time. That was like 2.5 hours of me monologuing about Beyondism. That's longer than I thought I'd be able to do it on, you know. Let's take a look at Hyper Chats here. So we're going over to Entropy first. Over on Entropy, we got Mr. Niggs with a big dono. Hold on, I gotta make sure I got the buttons. I still haven't fixed all my buttons. Here we go.
Money is power.
Oh, that's
money
loud.
Is the only weapon that the Jew has to defend himself with.
Look how Jewy this fag is. All right, and we've got Mr. Neggs says, have you ever looked into Mark Rich? I read his biography before being J-pilled. Looking back, there are probably more to the story. Isn't he that, yeah, he's like a Jewish billionaire Mossad agent guy, right? I'm trying to remember. I actually, he had some title like Seth Rich or something like that, because I, like, it's almost been 10 years now, but like almost 10 years ago, I did a video talking about Mark Rich and his involvement with something. No, it was something to do with the WikiLeaks emails. Let me see if it pops up. Mark Rich, he was, yeah, he was like some billionaire, some Jewish billionaire. Mark Rich, WikiLeaks? I forget how he was involved with WikiLeaks. Let's see here. Yeah, I'd have to, I mean, you'd have to be more specific. I'd have to look into it more. I just remember he was mentioned in something, in some video I did back in 2016. But I don't remember what the tie-in was. But it had something to do with WikiLeaks. Yeah, I guess that could be a topic. I'll copy that into my notes. Mark Rich. Okay. Let's see here. Thank you, Mr. Neggs. We got Gorilla Hands. Gorilla Hand says, I have been listening to you since your YouTube days back in 2018. I was listening to the first stream you did back in 2019 on my way home from work. It's almost like going back in time. You are right on about a Black Swan event, COVID, George Floyd, riots, and 2020 election. However, you still didn't want to name them. Back in 2019? Maybe I might have been a little more, I guess it depends on what platform I was on, because I did do a stream or two on YouTube, and so it might have had something to do with it. There was like a short, there was a brief period when I was trying to figure out how to do that, how to talk about Jews and still not, and not be silenced forever, you know what I mean? And then as alternative platforms started to pop up, it made it more, it made it easier to make that. But yeah, I guess that'd be, I haven't even listened to my old ones. I guess that'd be weird to go back and listen to some of my old stuff. But yeah, it's been doing this a long time now. Been doing this a long time. But appreciate that, Mr. Gorilla Hands. And then Mr. Gorilla Hands simply says, can I get a, oh, I don't know if I added the button for this yet. This might be one of the buttons I still don't have. Wait, here we go.
$500,000.
All right. And then Mr. Gorilla Hands also says, faggots. And then we got Mark Espy says, you mentioned in the last few streams, but it needs reiterating, AI is turning people into NPCs. Quote, I asked AI, end quote, is becoming the new I read on Wikipedia. Anything controversial can't be trusted. Well, it's not even anything controversial. It's anything can't be trusted. Wikipedia is actually way more accurate than AI. Because at least with Wikipedia, A, there's a mechanism to challenge it. There's sources that have to be cited. AI is it's almost like, it's like, I mean, part of its training data is Wikipedia, but I would say Wikipedia is way more accurate than AI. And AI is just wrong a lot, like a lot, about a lot of things. And sometimes just makes things up entirely. And it's going to make people stupid. It's already making people stupid. Wandering Fool.
by Donna Feather.
Hey. Wandering Fool says, I have a question for your younger viewers about AI. How much of your generation believes it to be true? In my conversations with students, I have been told that a considerable amount of them take what their preferred AI says as gospel. The internet doesn't lie was a meme not long ago. I wonder how much longer that will be the case. The reason I ask is because of an article in The Guardian called The New Historically Accurate Digital It's called New Historically Accurate Digital Replica Will Allow Films to Be Set Within Auschwitz. It brings up a point that Devin made previously about AI being used to sell a certain story. The article says, quote, a second phase of the project will involve 3D scanning, as well as a building historically accurate digital replicas of the crematoriums, the gas chambers that were destroyed by the Nazis in late 1944. If what I have been told by those students is true, we could be quickly approaching a point of no return. I also want to follow up. All right, we'll all address that first. Yeah, no, absolutely. That's going to be the thing is most people will just accept whatever AI says, especially as the historical record is indistinguishable from AI. So it's already at a point where historic footage is easy to fake. I mean, it's easy to fake. And there might be some giveaways now and some telltale signs, but you can see it already happening. People posting bullshit, obviously to us, AI photos on Twitter and getting, you know, billions of retweets from idiots that think it's like a real photo. That's already, and that's just now. There will come a point where it's pretty much impossible to distinguish whether or not the recording you're listening to is a actual recording of someone talking in 1945 versus an AI generated recording of someone. Because how would you tell the difference? Once the technology gets to a certain level, how are you going to tell the difference? And you know, beyond maybe being some kind of forensic expert in the field, and even then it might get almost impossible to tell the difference, right? So yeah, it's going to be really hard when anyone can rewrite history. And not only just rewrite history, they'll be able to have you experience it in some virtual way. They can tell you, not only did Auschwitz look like this, I'm going to put you in virtual Auschwitz. And they'll put you in virtual Auschwitz. And the technology is getting good enough to where it will be immersive. And it'll leave, you'll have people that get PTSD from visiting fake Auschwitz. And that'll leave a mark. And that's what they want. I mean, of course, obviously, that's what I'd want. If my whole worldview depended on getting people to believe in the Holocaust, I'd want to put them through a virtual Holocaust and give them as much PTSD as possible and mindfuck them. And they're going to do that. They will absolutely do that. And that's another reason why we can't be these people that just regress and ignore the technological reality and just, you know, try to live in some, you know, place with a dirt floor churning butter, you know, in the corner. We have to stay up to date with technology. And in fact, we have to not just stay up to date. We should be leading the innovation in technology. So or at the very least, reaching the people that are, you know, like if you yourself aren't going to be the one leading technology, we should be leading a movement that involves the people that are. And you should be raising children who are at least intellectually able and motivated to, like, you shouldn't be raising, like, I think that one of the problems that the right gets into is it's kind of what I was talking about at the very, very beginning of the stream, where in response to the term progressive and how everyone now sees that as progress is like a dirty word. And so they almost want to regress and go back to some weird, simpler time before computers. And I get that. And maybe on some level there, that's appropriate, but you don't want to raise people who are technologically illiterate, or they will be slaves to this machine. And so that's, I think, that's the tightrope that is going to be difficult but necessary for us to walk, is that you want to protect your children from the, I guess that's the genetic lag, right? Is that we're trying to deal with the genetic lag in beyondism terms, is that we got this new technology that offers all this evil and horrible shit, but it also has all this good attached to it, and not everyone's going to be genetically fit to deal with that, and those people are going to suffer, and it's not because of anything wrong with them. There's no way their genes could have anticipated the mutation that is the internet. Because all these innovations, see, this is why I like beyondism, is there are things that it makes it easy to articulate certain things. There are aspects of beyondism that are worthwhile, and this is one of those things where that is it precisely describes the situation that we are in terms of a lot of people with traditional values and things that are worth preserving having to somehow deal with the introduction of this technology that, again, you could describe as a mutation, and being genetically ill equipped to handle it, or at the very least having, maybe you're not genetically ill equipped, but maybe the transition between a life before this mutation was there and a life after is a difficult selection pressure that's being applied. And so I think that's going to be the big question, is in terms of whether or not we're able to weather this storm, is that's going to be a big part of that, is whether or not we're going to be able to technologically and intellectually keep up with some of these disruptive technologies. Let's see here. Well, thank you very much, Wandering Fool. Videograms says ChatGPT is definitely better than Grok. AA said Grok is like a Marxist professor. I concur that ChatGPT is more reasonable and honest if you are careful with wording. Grok will always force in Global Homo. I use all of them. I even use Gab's AI. Because surprisingly, Gab's been better in some areas. DeepSeek has been better in other areas. Grok is better in other areas. And it doesn't even matter whether or not I'm researching a topic like beyondism, or whether I'm having it help me write a Python script, which I do. I have to pass that script between different AIs in order for it to accomplish what I want sometimes. Like, I'll have ChatGPT in something that, again, it should just be, you know, this is the one area where AI is supposed to shine, right? And be able to generate code, because it's not subjective, right? And so I've had ChatGPT say, well, what you're trying to accomplish is impossible. And then I upload the exact same code to Grok and say the exact same prompt, and it's like, oh, here you go. I've updated the script to add that functionality. And you're like, oh, well, all right. And then Grok will hit a brick wall, and then you get the exact same script and go back to ChatGPT, and you're like, hey, you know that thing you said it was impossible? Well, I was able to get that fixed. But now we got this problem. And sometimes it's like, oh, well, I can fix this thing that Grok just said was impossible. Now, sometimes it becomes a big fucking mess, but I've been able to get a lot more coding that was way above my pay grade accomplished by doing this sort of a thing. Man of low moral fiber says you could do an entire stream about the Negro ineptitude that resulted in 10 violent New Orleans nogs escaping the resulting press conference. They were blamed Whitey for building a soft jail. I don't know what you're talking about. Did I miss something? Maybe I missed something. I have no idea what that's in reference to. Brown Trot Burglar says, long time, first time, you know how it goes. Gonna catch the replay. Now that AI is getting really good, why not try seeing if you can make shirts to commemorate your really big streams. Just an idea. Now back to raising my blonde hair, blue-eyed family. Well, I appreciate that. And yeah, I got to get some new merch ready in the store. As soon as I get a free moment. I was beekeeping most of today. And doing various other last-minute outdoor things I'm trying to get done before the heat hits. Jay Orlando says, good evening, Dev. Love the intro. My hens are well. Hatched 80 blue egg layers. Very few casualties, predators. Had a line on some bees, but not ready. Plus, man, I have neighbors. You be cool. Have a good one. Well, you can have neighbors and bees. Well, depending on where you live, if you live somewhere where there's not Africanized bees, then you can have bees all the time. Bees are not going to bother neighbors, even if they get close to the hive. Non-Africanized bees are pretty chill. You can open up the hive. In fact, the one hive I have, or actually I have two, that aren't Africanized today, I was fully suited up because I was opening the other hives too. They acted like I wasn't even there. Like I opened up the top and they just kept being bees. Had I not been wearing anything and had I not used any smoke, it wouldn't have mattered. They would have been totally fine. And unfortunately, that's just not the case with most of my hives anymore. Adam says things. Do you think you can get some hemp honey going? No, that's actually a lie. When people act like they've got, well, first of all, I wouldn't make any THC honey anyway. But like the THC honey that they talk about, where they're like, oh, look, we used bees to make honey out of marijuana flowers. That it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way because the bees aren't attracted to the female plants. Because the pollen is on the male plant. So they're getting the nectar and pollen from the male plant, and that doesn't have any THC in it. So when you see these advertisements like, oh, THC honeybee, they're lying to you. They're just squirting THC into honey is what they're doing. But as far as hemp honey, like actual just the male plant, I mean, I don't know. You'd have to grow a lot of hemp to get honey from it. And so I would need like acres of hemp. Because if I just grew like 10 hemp plants in my backyard, you know, like the male hemp plants, they're collecting nectar and honey from, or nectar and pollen from every other plant in the vicinity. So I guess it would, to some degree it would be hemp, but you know, if you want it to be a monoculture honey, you have to have enough of that plant to sustain the entire hive. Hammer Thorzine says, I may not have heard you mention it, but if you're not aware of Kanye's new album title, look it up. It'll explain everything. What's the new album title? It's literally called Cuck. Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, but super based, right? Super based and red pilled. Ah, boy, I was not aware of that. No, there you go. Imagine that. But you just don't get it, Devin. You just don't, really. I don't get it. I don't get you're promoting a album to white kids, a black man who sucked off his 9-year-old cousin for years. Actually didn't stop until the cousin was 9, which implies he started when he was much younger. And I don't get that he's promoting an album called Cuck. Yeah, okay. Ooh. It must be some kind of weird irony thing, right? Very good. Ryan Higgins with a big dono.
Money is power. Money is the only weapon that the Jew has to defend himself with.
Look how Jewy this fag is. All right, Ryan Higgins says, why is there such a reluctance among J-pilled whites to discard current theological belief systems that are easily corruptible and have led us to this modern reality, Christianity and paganism included? Why not discard everything and move forward based upon a core set of principles and virtues, then let the metaphysical system develop organically from this spiritual core? Well, I don't even know that that's necessary, but I'd say if that's what you set out to do, it's a lot easier said than done. The metaphor I've used in the past, I think, works and addresses what you're talking about. If what you wanted to do is discard what you saw as outdated religious theology and update it to something that's a little more pro-white or more ethnocentric, or really more anything, the problem that you're going to run into is the same problem that you would run into if you had a vast multinational corporation that, let's say, adopted some warehouse software back in the 1990s, and over the years they've been updating it and patching it to go from, you know, DOS to, you know, whatever operating system they're using now, and it's undergone a lot of these updates to accommodate the new hardware and the new shipping and interfacing with new clients and stuff. But ultimately, it's still the software that was written in the 1990s. And so, therefore, it has a lot of issues with it, a lot of exploits that need to be patched, and a lot of it's kind of clunky. The interface kind of sucks or whatever. It's not optimal. And if you were to just throw it out the window and write a new piece of software from scratch and deploy that, it would make everything just run smoother. You could even maybe calculate your company could save maybe millions of dollars every year just by switching to this new software. It would plug all these vulnerability holes, you know, whatever. That's, again, and anyone will tell you that works in any kind of environment like this. That's incorrect. Maybe you could write this new program that would do this and address all these problems or whatever, but it's easier said than done, because now you have to upgrade maybe a ton of hardware. You're going to inevitably come up with encounter new problems. New exploits are going to be found with this new hardware. You have to retrain everybody that works in your company that's been using this software for 30 years. You're going to have issues. You're going to have just regular compatibility issues. It's a huge undertaking to try to tell people that, hey, you know, this theology that as a people that you have practiced for over 1,000 years, yeah, we're going to just throw it out the window and use this other one because it's better. First of all, good luck selling that to people. And second of all, good luck developing something that's going to be capable of replacing it in any kind of meaningful way, or it's going to be attractive. And who knows, maybe a new religious revival will take place in the same way Christianity took hold in Europe. Maybe something else will catch on or rather much like Christianity was kind of top down implemented. Maybe something like that. I don't know. But it's easier said than done. And you're also dealing with, as someone that was raised in a very religious family, and I, even when I wasn't practicing Mormonism and I was out partying and drinking and smoking pot and whatever, and breaking all the rules, I still believed it. I still believed that, well, I'm just, you know, I'm sowing my wild oats. I will eventually go back and go to church and have a Mormon family and all that, and I'm just succumbing to temptation, and you know, eventually I'll come back to it. I thought in that context for a really long time. It took me a long time for me to discard, or not discard, because it's always going to be a part of my family history and part of my heritage. but to disconnect from viewing Mormonism as like scientifically true, you know, if that makes any sense. Like, it is not thinking of it as part of the narrative of reality, you know, and because it's just tough. Like, it's tough to, and I'd like to think that I'm pretty good at shifting and making, you know, I feel like I'm smart enough and open-minded enough, you know, to use a term, to readjust my belief system when necessary, and probably more so than the average person. And it was still really difficult for me to just say, I don't know if this checks out. Like, just for me to do that, just for me to go from, like, you know, being raised, this is the truth, and, you know, this is the way it is, to going, maybe it's not the way it is. Even just to make that step, it was a tough step to make. So you'd be up against that, and look, I'm certainly not saying that Christianity is the source of all the problems of white people, or that even that it's necessary to bypass or discard in order to succeed as a people. But there are certainly some very real problems with our current situation and the role, at least, that Christianity is playing currently, in the context of decline of the West and white genocide. There's an issue with Christianity that is not adequately being addressed in any kind of significant way, that I see, at least. So, there are problems that need to be addressed, and I don't see them being addressed. And, in fact, I see a lot of people coping, you know, and ignoring some of the gaping holes and problems with it. But that said, you know, it is what it is. I'm not trying to be a fence sitter. It's just like, I'm genuinely agnostic on the topic. I was raised, like I said, Mormon, and it was a big step for me to be like, this is probably not it, you know, and I've yet to go from that to, but this is it, you know, like I'm still in that zone of, this is probably not it. You know, it's tough. It just goes to show, it is tough. It's tough to make any kind of change like that. And maybe, you know, just like it did take for Christianity to be implemented, maybe it does take like a top-down kind of a thing, you know, like some kind of enforced, enacted from some, you know, dictator, like, maybe some dictator has to say, this is the new religion now, for it for that change to take. I don't know. But it's just, it's not the easiest thing. It's not like it's not like changing soda brand. It's not like going from Coke to Pepsi. And look how hard it is for people to do that. Now, there's diehard fucking Coke fans that, I hate Pepsi. It's like, it's basically the same shit, dude. But they can't do it. Yeah, there's people have brand loyalty to Christianity. Just that psychological aspect of it is hard to overcome, if that's your mission. And I'm not even saying, again, that's not my mission. I don't know that that's necessary. I'm just saying that if that's what you wanted to do, you would have a lot of obstacles. It would not be the easiest thing. Reese Sneeder says, not to oversimplify it, but race first. Everything is downstream of race, which is determined by genetics, God, and nature. Yeah, well, like I said, the thing that I appreciate about Beyondism is that it prioritizes the success of your, he doesn't term it race, but basically it's implied by saying that your group, you know, your race. And I appreciate that is the motivation, and I appreciate the attempt at making a coherent theology that puts that forth as the driving factor. And I do think it's coherent. I just don't think it's realistic, you know. But I do appreciate the attempt to put forth a rational, coherent theology that is race-based. And look, there's other race, there's plenty of race-based theologies that have come and gone, and obviously Judaism has seems to have staying power, and that seems to have been very successful for them. And I do think that at times Christians, European Christians, and you can see it in their writing, when you see early Christians, like even early American writings, where they talk about, oh, and he was a Christian, they mean white. That's what they mean. When you know, you'll hear, you know, like an early settler talk about, oh, this man was Christian and this guy was Indian. Yeah, and they clearly mean white, you know. And there was a time when Christian was synonymous with white. But the way that Christianity is applied today is it's universalist. It's which is incompatible with having a theology that is in the interest of your own people, and prioritizes your people above other people. And that's just a reality. And there's no major Christian denomination that deviates from that. They are all universalists in that respect. And that's a problem. It's a problem. It's a problem for me. And it's probably a problem for a lot of you. Even those of you who are very devout Christians, it's probably a problem. And so there needs to be a solution to that problem. Arch Stanton.
Good gorilla.
Very interesting stuff tonight. I used to judge Muslim countries as being backward, but maybe all the burqas and sex segregation was necessary because they are a naturally rapey people, which doesn't make for a sustainable society. No, and that's the thing, is that's another thing Beyondism, I think, articulates well, that, yeah, you might have, you should not have universalist ethics and rules if you don't have universal biology. If you have a group of people who are biologically more prone to being rapey, you need rules that account for that. And I think, look what's happening with the Muslims coming into the West, raping people. And yet, these European countries welcoming them in are also attacking, much like France is, you know, attacking the burqa, attacking these rules that that the Muslims themselves have implemented to police themselves and to try to reduce this issue they've got. And they think that, oh, we're going to just apply Western values to these non-Western people and it'll be fine. And it's not fine. They end up getting lots of rape. And so, yeah, that's another, I think, I appreciate about Beyondism, is that it made a rational, it expressed rationally the necessity for different people to have different ethics. And I believe that 100%. White trash enthusiast. Thanks for all the great work, Sir Stack. If I may recommend two short stories to read for all, White Slave, the true story of Richard Hazelton, and also Crow Killer, about Jeremiah Liver-Eaton Johnson. All right, I will copy that into my... No, I haven't heard of either one of those stories. But I will look into those. Thank you, White Trash Enthusiast. We got Bessemer.
Cash Flow Checkout.
I'd like to return this duck.
Bessemer. Hi, Devin. Reminds me of when the Catholics went to convert Haiti. The folks liked Christianity, but insisted they also keep their voodoo beliefs. The Catholics said, sure, no problem. You can have both. Thanks for the deep thoughts tonight. I'm going to have a listen again to understand this better. Yeah, that's the thing is you can't have your cake and eat it too. You know, you can't say that we're all God's children and we all have the same rules and everything should apply to us equally. But also we're different, you know, like if you're going to be universalist in your theology and in your ethics, then you believe in multiracialism, because why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? So that's something else that I think Beyondism had made a good argument for, is that, you know, having this just acceptance that different groups, that acceptance of moral relativism, not in the way that progressives mean it, where like it's individualist based, where it's like, oh, everyone, your morality is just based on your own individual, you know, but whatever you decide that day, that that's too extreme. Like, that's ridiculous and untenable, but that you should recognize that there are enough differences between groups where ethics would potentially need to be different, or apply differently to different groups. And, well, you know, one example would be, say, because of the behavior of black children, corporal punishment might be more moral when raising black children than raising white children. Let's see here. Rock Paladin. Rock Paladin says, hi, Devin. I don't have a lot to say. Just want to support the show. Can I get a...
Focus!
Yes, you can. Thanks for the support there, Rock Paladin. Wired says, thanks, Devin. When I get another job, I'll throw in some more money. Well, hey, every dollar counts. I appreciate that, Wired. And good luck on the job hunt. And I don't say that for selfish reasons. hopefully you get a job where you get paid millions of dollars. Brody says, hi, Devin. Could we please see a pic of your redneck incinerator? When you are done with Carl's place, you could put some copper tubing in it and use it as a hot water heater for a hot tub. I guess I could take a picture. It's just a 50-gallon drum with some holes drilled in the bottom of it and then raised up on cinder blocks and then a chimney on the top. It's nothing fancy. It's just... but yeah, I haven't burned anything in it in a while, but I'll probably be warming it back up pretty soon here. Sharpshooter says, hey, Devin, good stream as always. White people burden to lead for other races to succeed. We have to keep racial hygiene and keep our blood free from foreign taint and use eugenics to better our race. Yeah, I guess I'm a firm believer in eugenics, and I think that I'm a more of a believer in soft eugenics, meaning that you still let the natural part of natural selection take part. Like, you don't necessarily have to guide who's breeding with who in some kind of formal way. I don't think that's even necessarily would even produce results you'd want. I think that it would be far better to definitely get rid of the criminal elements of your society by sterilizing, as we were prior to World War II, the criminal elements of your society, being way more liberal with the death penalty, and then alleviating the financial burdens put on the performers of your society that are used to subsidize the non-performing members of your society. And that if you just simply did that, that natural selection would kick in, because you would give the performers in your society the natural rewards of their performance, you know, instead of forcing them to subsidize everybody else. And so you wouldn't have to have to the degree that I think someone like Cattell would want. He would probably want some kind of formal board of elites, you know, formally trying to identify good traits in different stocks of people and trying to guide the breeding of those people. I don't think that that would be necessary, or even, as I said, I don't even think it'd be desirable. I don't know that it would produce what you would want. You'd probably end up with some unintended consequences. Whereas if you just let nature take its course and then got rid of the bad, the dead weight, because right now we practice dysgenics. We have a dysgenic society. We punish success and reward failure. And so if all you did is reverse that, the rest of it would take care of itself. And then Sharpshooter says, speaking about the death penalty, car thief should also get the death penalty. Horse thieves in the West would get executed, and cars are the modern horse. White collar crime, death penalty. I believe that 100%. If you were to death penalty, like bankers that commit fraud, politicians who commit, I guess political fraud. I think you could really expand on the death penalty. Let me just put it that way. Then we got N-word alarm with the big dono.
Money is power. Money is the only weapon that the Jew has to defend himself with.
Look how Jewy this fag is. All right, N-word alarm says, replay gang here. Thank you for your streams. Well, I appreciate that, and thanks for the support there. N-word alarm. Man of low moral fiber says, 10 violent New Orleans prisoners escaped from prison. Black guards didn't notice until a morning headcount. The press conference was appalling. It illustrates black incompatibility with modern society. Well, see, that's another thing. You'd be able to separate blacks and let them evolve on their own and fail on their own. Because not only should you not prop up the weaker members of your genetic pool, you certainly shouldn't be propping up any members of other gene pools. And that would alleviate so many issues. Just if you stop taking resources from whites and giving them to non-whites, I mean, there's like half your problems right there. Reese Neeter says, agree with the Arch Stanton. Islam is necessary to control dumb sand people that are super rapey. Christianity or Jungian archetypal psycho-spiritual ideology suits higher-minded whites that don't need brutal dictatorial rule by punishment. Yeah, different groups need different amounts of violence, really, to get a cohesive society. All right, let's take a look over at Rumble. And on Rumble, I'm going to have to double check something real quick. So I didn't turn on the whatchamacallit. Let's see here. Actually, hang on 1 second. Thank you. All right. I'm actually back now. almost took longer than that thing took. There was some commotion outside. I had to investigate. I think it's Javelinas again. Where was... Here we go. I got to make sure this is the... Here we go. Over on Rumble, we got Zazzy McTazbot. Keep doing what you do. You do it well. I appreciate that. Corsica SS says, what's the worst N-word you can call a black person? Neighbor. We need a new religion. Something about how whites are going to go extinct in the last 100 years if we don't change how we do things. Well, you never know. It might give birth to something, some kind of religious movement. Once the pressure is really felt. Right now, we are shrinking, but we're not such a minority to where there's like, what's the word? I can't say unfortunately, because that means, like, if I say unfortunately, it means it sounds like I want there to be less white people. But I guess regardless of the fortune of it, there's still enough white people to where there's a lot of white people that don't realize how few white people there are, if that makes any sense. And look, Europe's not as bad off. Americans, we have a different situation here. Gen Exterminator says, bring back miscegenation laws. We need an amusement park like Auschwitz to remember the Kawadpata, whatever. I don't know. I thought it was Kwatapa. Wasn't it Kwatapa? You have Kawapata. But yes. Let's see here. And we got Cage Mushinjuro says, replay gang here. Follow you on Twitter, sir. Always great to hear your opinions. Stay cool. Walk in the shade. We'll catch you next time. Well, I appreciate that. Vilified says, donation for your next churros cat food. Next churros. Okay. Well, I appreciate that. There's a mountain of old churro cat food. That guy used to eat so much. I didn't realize how much was left. But appreciate that all the same. We got Land of the Fake, Home of the Gay. The Tower of Babel is a cautionary tale about globalism wanting too much, a one-size-fits-all solution. There is no magic bullet. Anything sold as a panacea should be regarded as sus, like AI. Yeah, I understand that. I know Christians will mention that the Tower of Babel is a cautionary tale that warns against globalism. But here's the issue. Not everyone interprets it like that. The fact that just Christianity in general is interpreted in so many different ways, regardless of what your interpretation is, makes it that in and of itself is kind of an issue, that it's not as straightforward as one would like it to be. And that even if that's a story about globalism, which that is your interpretation, there's no explicit warning against that, and there's also not a that still doesn't change the fact that it is universalist in its application of ethics, when I think that is something that is fundamental to the issue. Let's see here. Scrolling down, we got Yo Jimbo Rockford says, here's some shekels for your courage in asking the important questions like, are you hungry, girl? And is your mother a nigger? Keep up the great work. Not sure what you mean there exactly, but yeah. I was looking for I think one of them I get. No, I can't find it. See, I got one of these days, I'll have all this worked out. Occidental Front says, ever looked into doing a stream on Port Arthur? That YouTube channel, The Wasp Files, is pretty good resource. You never expect a false flag can happen to you. No, I'm not sure what exactly you're talking about, but I will I'll copy that and put that in my notes and maybe check it out later. Let's see here. We've got... still scrolling. There we go. Cage Mushinjuro again. Mormons all want to be like the Nephites. And by the way... or wait. And not by the way. And bow down under the sword, no matter what race wields it, like a death cult. Not 100% sure I get the context, but I haven't been to church in many, many years. So maybe that's why. And then Cage Mushinjuro says, actually, I'm talking about the Lamanites who became Nephites. They just knelt down and had their heads chopped off. Shit idea. Yeah, again, I've read through most of the Book of Mormon, but decades ago, you know, it's... unless you're talking about the very basics, it's... the specifics are all gone. Cage Mushinjuro again says, it's at least important to recognize that the internet is relatively new technology, and everyone who grew up without it, has not managed it extremely well, and we are seeing the results. Well, I would say that the people who have grown up with it have not managed it extremely well either. And I just think that it's such a new paradigm shifting technology that it will be a long time before people there's a real cohesive coexistence between humans and the internet, you know? Like right now I still feel like it's very disruptive and people aren't sure exactly how to handle it. Let's see here. Then we've got Cage Mushinjuro again. I have a real problem with people assuming meanings for terms that they have not researched. Just because the word eugenics sounds like the word genocide does not mean that they mean the same thing. Yeah, a lot of people just, they equate the two. And maybe that was the reason why the Jewish guy who came up with the word genocide decided to use it. You realize it wasn't, genocide was not a word. People don't know this, little fun fact. Genocide was not a word in the English language until post-World War II and the Nuremberg trials. A Jew came up with the word genocide so they could charge the Nazis with their new word, genocide. Look it up. I'm not making that up. Cage Mushinjuro again. Argument for murderers is that people are not raised the same. If you were somehow able to make it that every person was raised correctly, I can understand wanting to even if you're raised wrong, I don't care. If you murder, we don't need you. I don't care what the environment was. If you end up a murderer, if any environment made you a murderer, you aren't yet the death penalty. That's my way I look at it. If any environment made you a murderer, and look, that murder, by the way, doesn't mean self-defense. I mean like murder. Like murder. If you're a murderer, under any circumstances, you get the death penalty. Zilla 69420 says, if you haven't looked into the Jerry Parks murder, I think it would be an interesting one related to the Vince Foster case and cocaine trafficking in Arkansas. He was a security guy for Clinton. The Jerry Parks murder. Is this one of the Clinton body count ones? I'll put it in there. Let's see here. Hate Commander says, some good food for thought tonight, Devin. Even for a Mensa defect like me. I don't know if you're a mental defect, but I just wanted to cover it because I thought it was a fascinating ideology that, again, I'm not promoting. I'm just saying this has some interesting, you know, unique ways of looking at things. Scroll. Negro Spritzer, of course, expresses his displeasure with, well, Negroes and those wearers of small hats, enjoyers of tortillas, sand frolickers, hotel owners, butt fuckers, etc. How about that? Scroll, scroll, scroll. Then we got Cage Mushinjaro again says, AI doesn't worry me because the electricity will be turned off due to the economy soon anyway. Well, I don't think so. I think we're going to be... I think electricity will be fine, and I think they're going to... They'll make it more efficient anyway. They're going to make the technology work more efficiently. I think that was one of the big deals with DeepSeek, is that it just already... in the short time that we've had some competition. Another example, by the way, of when competition increases innovation. DeepSeek, one of the big selling points of DeepSeek was that it lowered the requirement for all these CUDA cores that a lot of this other stuff runs on. Not that I'm a big expert on it, but I do think it'll get way more efficient, and I think, you know, there's so much momentum around the American empire. Even if we're in a death spiral, we still got a long ways to go before we hit the ground. Aphis Crow says, I always thought that I was born into a Native American family until Dad told me I was born 8 months after his vasectomy. He left his house, car, and bank account to me, and now I am a white bastard. What? I don't think I understand what you're saying here. I always thought that I was born into a Native American family until Dad told me I was born 8 months after his... Well, I mean, it takes 9 months, so it could still be you. He left his house, car, and bank account to me, and now I am a white bastard. Not sure I get what you're saying there, but it sounds interesting, if not maybe a little confusing. All right, we're going to go back to entropy there. We got Reese Nieder says, agree with Arch Stanton. Islam is necessary to control dumb sand people that were always rapey, super rapey. Christianity or Jungian archetype psycho-spiritual ideology suits... Did I already read that one? I think I already read that one. And then Arch Stanton says, my position on death penalty is for it in theory, against it in practice. In other words, if it's going to take 50 years to execute someone, what's the point? No, I think it should be immediate. I think that, and it would be, the court system would be way less burdened if we were way more into eugenics. You know, like how, that's the thing is, our whole justice system, this is another thing. Our whole justice system was designed to accommodate white people. Is that who it's accommodating? Is that who the justice system is wrapped up and preoccupied with? No. And so if we were in a society that only had to deal with other white people, then your justice system would be a lot more able to handle the caseload. And also, by the way, so would your law enforcement system. Then we got Anton Ovay. Why is that not playing audio? Hang on a sec.
Hello.
That one played. That's weird.
Hello. Hello.
All right, well, that's weird. Anton Ovay says, testing, testing, faggot, faggot. Well, there you go, Anton Ovay. Everything appears to be working just fine. Everything seems to be working just fine. All right, guys. Well, let's double check Rumble real quick. Okay, wait, we got one last one on Rumble. Guitar Dude 1360 says the Jews took over America by turning the country into a mouse utopia experiment. And what is the min donation for the short vids? And what is the min for you to ship honey to me? I arbitrarily picked $25 to hit an animation. I don't know why I landed on that. The secret's out now, I guess. And then to ship honey out, that's going to be, like I said, I got to figure out the packaging and the distribution side of things, which I will be exploring this year. And at the earliest, it'll be available later this year before Christmas. Or I'll at least have explored the options enough to have it available by the following year. I don't know that I have enough. I'll have enough honey to sell a whole lot of it. But next year is probably more likely. This year, who knows? You know, I have the equipment now to package it, and I have designed the packaging, which I've been. I designed it a couple of years ago. I've been itching to fucking show you guys this shit because it's so fucking hilarious. And I'm not just tooting my own horn. It is really funny. You guys will like it. But that said, I have to have honey to put into the packaging. And I got to figure out the shipping and the distribution side of things. I've never done anything like this before in my life. But we'll get it figured out. All right, guys, I'm going to go ahead and shut her down now. I appreciate you guys being here and supporting the show. And hopefully, like I said, hopefully no one got their panties in a bunch tonight. It was not my intention to do anything other than to provoke some thinking and some discussion about possible future theological options for white people and ethnocentric philosophy options, or at least ideas. All right, guys. In the meantime, hope you all have a good rest of your weekend. We'll be back here on Wednesday night. And in the meantime, ba-dum-ba-dum-bum, I am, of course, Devastating.
She's about to crash. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Oh, shit.